and gentlemen, welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, 13th of January, 2025. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today, a lot of news to cover, but we're going to start today with a bit of sad news and a bit of an homage, a bit of a memorial to the great Scott Adams, one of the most prominent voices in the MAGA movement, the author of the Dilbert comic books. And a real maverick, and he'd been sick for a long time, and he passed away today. So I wanted to play a video of his from September of this year following the Charlie Kirk assassination. But he gets into a concept that he sort of introduced to political discourse, which is the idea of watching two different movies on the same screen, the alternate realities that liberals and conservatives reside in. His impact on this world will go long beyond his life. Here is the late Scott Adams. Let's go to clip one, guys.
Of teachers and people associated with schools of various types who are getting canceled, meaning fired, for saying horrible things about essentially being happy or saying it was justified that Charlie Kirk got assassinated. What do you think about that? That people are losing their jobs all over the place. Well, let me tell you the thing that is most shocking about that. The most shocking thing is that the people who spoke out that way believed they wouldn't get fired. I think they were all surprised, which means they've been living entirely within a bubble in which they thought other people would agree with that. Are you kidding me? They thought they were in the bubble of reality where, let's say that Hitler was an American and he died. Would you feel bad about saying, thank God Hitler died? No, you wouldn't, because you would assume that almost every single person would agree with you. So it would be easy to say that. These people are saying it in public for the world to see as if that's what a normal person would think. How hypnotized would you have to be? So in my mind anyway, and I think I've said it online at least once, I think of these people as the hypnotized Hitlerians. Hypnotized Hitlerians. You can drop the hypnotized if you need to. But the Hitlerians are people who live in this little world where they think Hitler actually came to power in the United States because so many bad people on the left have been saying that, people who should know better. So I actually have some weird empathy for these teachers getting fired for saying horrendous things about Charlie Kirk because they actually think they're in a different reality than they are. How do you think you're in a different reality? Is it because you individually had some mental problem? Probably not. It's probably really a predictable outcome of the rhetoric that we're seeing from the left. It's the most predictable outcome that people would believe it as literal, all the Hitler stuff. Oh, it's literally as bad as Hitler. We better do something about it. So I would say the people getting canceled are in their own way, although, you know, our system is that you have to hold them responsible. I'm not saying they're not responsible. They are responsible, but they are also victims because they've been hypnotized to believe something hideous and going through life. Imagine them going through life thinking that they live in a world that had been taken over by some Hitler character. I don't even know what that would feel like, but it would certainly distort your opinions and actions.
So again, that was Scott Adams. He passed away this morning after a very long and public battle with cancer. So of course we'll keep him in our prayers. He did issue a final letter to everybody where he converted to Christianity and embraced Jesus Christ. So again, his impact will last long, long after he's gone. Still unfortunate. Godspeed, Scott Adams. We'll be back on the other side with the news. Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Coming to you this morning on InfoWars, or this afternoon rather, on InfoWars.com, band.video. Streaming on X as well. Of course, please do share those links. We got a lot of news to talk about today. I'm also going to open up the lines for your calls. Probably about halfway through the show. Might do the same thing Alex did, say, new callers only. But I do feel like we need some other voices in the conversation, because right now it feels like the same conversation is being had over and over and over, which is just, okay, well, what do we do now? What do we do now? And why is Trump not just doing what we elected him to do? It's very baffling. I mean, everybody on the right wing that I hear talk about this either is like Dan Bongino, basically saying, shut up, stop questioning. Trump's doing amazingly. You just don't get it, which obviously isn't true. Or the vast majority of people are all sitting around going, all right, Trump's just not doing it. So what is next? Where do we go from here? What do you do when you discover, when you, finally establish once and for all that your electoral system is utterly fraudulent and cannot be used to correct the system as it stands? Where do you go from here? We'll take your calls on that and a lot more. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, folks, here it is, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 13th of January, 2025. Bill and Hillary Clinton declare themselves above the law as they defy Epstein's subpoena with an astonishing letter slamming Trump's, quote, cruel agenda of getting justice for the girls they raped and trafficked. Yeah. The ex-president was scheduled to testify in a closed-door deposition in the House Oversight Committee's bipartisan investigation into Epstein at 10 a.m. Tuesday, but failed to show. Hillary was slated to appear on Wednesday. House Oversight Republican Chairman James Comer promised to bring contempt proceedings next week, setting off a potentially protracted and politically fraught legal battle that would be the first time in history a sitting or former president has been held in contempt by Congress. So we'll show you that in just a little bit. We'll show you Comer's statements. It's just goes on and on. The merry-go-round never stops. It's just, you would think at a certain point, we'd be able to punish the criminals, but not even on the horizon as far as I can tell. Meanwhile, Trump administration ends Somalia TPS, affecting thousands of migrants. The Trump administration is ending temporary protected status for Somalia, affecting several thousand Somalis living in the U.S. and several hundred currently living in Minnesota under the protection. Somali immigrants with TPS will be required to leave the country by March 17th. Temporary means temporary, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem told Fox News Digital in a statement. Country conditions in Somalia have improved to the point where it no longer meets the law's requirement for temporary protected status. I'm sure this will be reversed by probably a Somalian in a judge's robe pretty soon. If I look back in the past and continue that pattern into the future. Meanwhile, Trump favors attacking Iran. Vance pushing back as President Pezeken in streets for large counter protest. There are reports of a significant internal Trump administration divide over Iran policy, with Vice President Vance said to be leading the charge for the non-interventionist camp, which much of MAGA might welcome, seeing Vance as the top contender in 2028. Yes, so this is, again, it's the same internal battle that we've been reporting on since the beginning of this administration, with some America First portion of the Trump administration not being in favor of going to war for Israel over and over forever, and a large chunks of his administration that are Israeli, so, or Israeli-controlled. So that battle is continuing. We just pray for ourselves and America and the world that the anti-interventionalist win out. Finally, Pentagon paid eight figures for a mysterious device believed to be the cause of Havana syndrome that sickened spies, sources say. From Daily Mail, the weapon has been blamed for a series of unexplained ailments impacting U.S. spies, diplomats, and military service members for the past decade. According to military sources speaking to CNN, the Defense Department has spent more than a year testing the device, which was reportedly purchased in an undercover operation for eight figures. The device was clandestinely purchased in the final days of the Biden administration and is said to produce pulsed radio waves that penetrate a person's body, according to insiders. Yeah, maybe. Maybe they bought it from somebody just now, and we didn't know about it. Or maybe they've been testing direct energy weapons since the 1950s, and we didn't buy it from anybody because we made it ourselves literally decades ago. You know, it was one of those. It's one of those, too. And actually, our final story is, of course, the story we started with. Dilbert creator Scott Adams, dead at 68. POTUS referred to the late cartoonist as a fantastic guy who supported him when it wasn't popular to do so. President Trump offered his condolences to Scott's family. Cartoonist Scott Adams died after a long, protracted battle with prostate cancer. And, of course, we will remember him and his contributions to the overall sanity of this country and the world. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you go to get any of the supplements that can massively change your life, as well as you get 50% off the awesome, badass new trench knife that we have, which is the same model as our old trench knife, which was an absolute bestseller, but it's got a cool new design on the side with a 1950s pinup girl, and life is fiery with its beauty. Really a beautiful weapon. You can get it right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com, that introductory price. So let's get into the story that we covered at the top of the Daily Dispatch. That is the fact that Bill and Hillary Clinton have decided not to appear for their hearing, their deposition in front of Congress. Now, this is a similar thing that happened with Steve Bannon or Peter Navarro. They, of course, spent time in jail following this. Will Bill and Hillary Clinton spend time in jail? Had to guess, I'd say probably not. If I had to go by the pattern that we've witnessed over the last several decades, I have a feeling they're going to get away with this because they always do. We go down to clip number 11. This is House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer talking about holding Bill and Hillary Clinton in contempt of Congress. Let's watch.
Unanimously by the committee in a bipartisan manner, we will move next week in the House Oversight Committee markup to hold former President Clinton in contempt of Congress.
Yeah, good
job. So with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman,
anybody on the committee?
Will I bring Trump
for an
interview? In this investigation?
President Trump has answered thousands of questions about Jeffrey Epstein. I would say today, you all ask him questions every day. He answers questions every day about Epstein. You can't bring in a current president of the United States, and you all know that. But President Trump has answered thousands of questions about Epstein. I bet today, at some point, some of you all will ask President Trump questions about Epstein. He answers those questions. To my knowledge, former President Clinton has never answered questions about Epstein, and we just had questions because, again, I think anyone would admit they spent a lot of time together while Bill Clinton was president and post-presidency.
And, of course, we've reported he was called Epstein's best friend when the victims of Epstein were asked who else they should look into. Apropos of nothing, they say, first and foremost, Bill Clinton. He was second in command, you might say. He was the most prominent person that they saw with Epstein. We've talked about how Epstein himself was introduced to one of his victims by Bill Clinton, who called Epstein the King of America. And of course, we've explained that this is all tied in with Iran-Contra. It goes all the way back to MENA, Arkansas, and Clinton was already in the CIA then, positioned as governor to provide the cover-up and, you know, give legal cover to the drug-running operations that were being used to fund black side operations by the CIA, as well as destroy America from the inside out by flooding our ghettos with highly potent narcotics. And all of this is the same sort of trend, the same sort of organization. And like, that's, again, the thing that we're repeatedly shown over and over and over and over is that there is, in this world today, a secret ruling class that is above reproach, above the law, cannot be pulled in. It's not just about money. People with money can be charged with things. People with money can be taken down and sent to prison. These people don't have the most money out of anybody, right? Bill and Hillary Clinton, I'm sure, are rolling in the dough, but they have something more important than money. They have institutional power. They have well-established participation in intelligence agency activities. That means it's actually the prerogative of the agency themselves to protect Bill and Hillary Clinton, because they're actually just protecting the agency itself. So, like, that's what you need to understand. Like, it's infuriating. It's wrong. It shouldn't be this way. How we dismantle this system is pretty obvious. You have to go for the head of the snake. You have to dismantle the CIA itself. You have to clear out the seventh floor of the State Department where all of this stuff takes place. And we're going to get into a little bit later, maybe sooner rather than later. But the way George Soros plays into this, because people are realizing, in fact, we'll go to this video, because I do think it ties it all in together. And again, it's just an understanding that puts most world activities in a frame that's understandable and recognizable. That is, very simply, the intelligence agencies are the enforcement arm of the banking elite. Okay? The politicians are the front-facing mask of the intelligence agencies. But they're all working together, and the people who are actually in charge of these agencies and actually the highest up agents of these intelligence networks are never formally in the agencies at all. They're business magnates or bankers or presidents of the United States, but you're not going to find them, you know, with their picture on the wall in the Langley headquarters, because actually the CIA is an underling to the global groups, the secretive global networks that operate above the national intelligence networks as an international superstructure of control that use the CIA as pawns. It's not actually that complicated, but that's just what you need to understand when you look at this. Like, and because when you truly understand that, when you really like comprehend what it is I'm saying here, then it's not confusing to you why Bill and Hillary Clinton are refusing to testify, because they have no fear that they'll be thrown into prison. They have no reason to adhere to any laws because they themselves are literally above the law. Like, I know people understand this to a certain degree. I should really bring in some more clips of like CIA agents talking about this, like John Kirikou, you know, was always going around talking about this, where, and, you know, Tex Gunderson, what's that his name? Ted Gunderson came out with this decades ago, talking about the fact that, like, theoretically, you know, some of the things the CIA does, like, there really is no justification for it. But when you're the intelligence agencies and you get to say, well, if we don't do this, millions of people will die, what, you know, what can't you fabricate or do? So you just have to understand, when Jeffrey Epstein was arrested, he had like 10 different passports from like Saudi Arabia and all these other places. Like, when you're a CIA agent or a CIA operative or a useful asset to them. In fact, I actually just saw a video. It wasn't John Kirikou. I don't think it was that other CIA guy who I trust less, but he's got the crazy fizzy hair. And he's talking about he had a guy that he was interrogating, and he's being all cloak and dagger about it. But essentially what he's saying is that the guy demanded children as payment. Said, I have information that can save millions of lives. I demand children as payment. And the guy's like, all right, well, I can't do that. Like, that's not possible. And he goes to his superiors, and his superiors say, of course that's possible. Just send a request. Okay. And again, he's being all, you know, double blind about it, where he's going, you know, there was something this man wanted as currency. And I thought, there's no way we can get that. But my superior is just like, yeah, tell Langley, just send out, yeah, send a request. We need one child, please. Send it off. They send you a child. You give it to the criminal. And he disposes of it at his leisure. Like, that's the type of thing these people do. That's what they can get away with. Do you know where to source a child? Probably not, right? Because you haven't maintained the networks of human trafficking and drug trafficking. You aren't involved in the mafia as the, you know, secret state partner of these criminal groups. But they are. All these people. That this is what they do. That's what they're involved in. They are, for all intents and purposes, literally above the law. Okay? When you can go demand passports or sacrificial children or drugs or whatever else. Like, they can just do whatever, whenever. There's no limits. There's no barriers. There's nothing. Because it's secretive and it's predicated on national security. And these two things go hand in hand. So we can do whatever we want, and we don't have to tell you what we're doing. Okay, if you are a criminal mastermind, like, why would you not set that system up? Once you set that system up, well, it explains the last several decades of the course of humankind, doesn't it? Let's go to clip 15 here. I believe this is 15. Actually, you know what? I may be looking at the wrong video. Yeah, let's go to clip 24 here. Clip 24 is somebody realizing what a part, she's part right. She's getting there. She's getting there. Thing to understand, she's going to talk about how George Soros is a CIA asset. That's true, but it's a lot deeper than that, okay? Remember, well, I'll go over it. I'll go over it with you in just a second. But this is ultimately important because the exact same strategy of color revolution that was carried out in Ukraine and unsuccessfully carried out in Georgia and all these other places is now not only being used in Iran, but in America as well. I mean, it's the exact same playbook we see roll out over and over again because this is a tried and tested, effectual way to take over a country. Well, let's watch clip 24 now.
I think I found the real reason George Soros is still allowed to operate freely inside the United States while he's been kicked out or heavily restricted in Russia, Hungary, Turkey, Pakistan, Poland, the Philippines, and a half dozen other countries. The answer is simple, and it's hiding in plain sight. George Soros has probably been one of the CIA's most valuable private assets for over 40 years. He's the civilian deniable billion-dollar funding arm of American regime change operations worldwide. That's why no attorney general, no Congress, and no president has ever seriously moved to shut him down here. He's not just allowed in America, he's protected. This is why both George and Alex are so arrogant. If you've seen my video on color revolutions, you already know the script. Soros bankrolled this prototype in Serbia in 2000, refined it in Georgia in 2003, Ukraine in 2004, and the Arab Spring in 2011. The same USAID, NED, and Open Society Foundation's logos appear in every single one. The Arab Spring was a trial run for Europe's migrant crisis. In 2011, the CIA and Soros turned that playbook on Libya and Syria. Gaddafi warned the West in March of 2011 that if you take him out, millions would flood Europe from Africa. 8 months later, he was dead, and Libya was chaos, and the migrant waves began exactly as he had predicted. By 2015-2016, battle-hardened jihadists and economic migrants were streaming across the Mediterranean with iPhones, prepaid cards, and Twitter guides written in Arabic, the same social media mobilization tactics used in Kyiv and Tahrir Square. Wayne Madsen called it straight in 2015. This was a deliberate Soros CIA social engineering operation to fracture Europe from within. Same playbook, new target, and now we have America. 2020 to present. Remember the 2020 summer riots? Soros Open Society's foundations gave at least $33 million to the groups that organize and sustain them. How about the southern border caravans? Soros-backed NGOs provided the lawyers, the maps, and the logistics. How about defund the police and DAs in every major city? Soros money elected them. They're running the color revolution playbook on us now. Only this time, the target isn't Belgrade or Damascus, it's you. And this is why JFK was right. After the Bay of Pigs betrayal, President Kennedy reportedly told aides he wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it into the winds. He never got the chance. 62 years later, we're living in the world the CIA built. One where a Hungarian-born billionaire who collapsed the Bank of England can pour unlimited dark money into American elections and street movements, and nobody in power dares touch him. Because he's not a liability, he's their most successful off-the-books contractor. The only question left? If Hungary, a country of 9 million people, can pass Stop Soros laws and kick his operations out, why can't we? Maybe it's time we finish what JFK started.
Yeah, so again, she's right in one regard, but I think she kind of has it backwards, right? Soros isn't working for the CIA. The CIA is employed by Soros. You understand that difference? Soros is a part of the group above the CIA that's orchestrating all of this. And actually, a video went viral recently of George Soros being interviewed by Chrystia Freeland, by the way. Remember Chrystia Freeland, deputy prime minister under Justin Trudeau, helped to get rid of all the bank accounts of the truckers. And she moved over to replace the Zelensky lieutenants that fled the country with $100 million to go live in Israel. So that Chrystia Freeland is interviewing George Soros, and they're bragging about how every single person in the Ukrainian government was a George Soros fellow, had gone through his Open Society's training organization and had been, you know, indoctrinated as an agent of theirs. Do you think that's not being done under the auspices of international intelligence? I mean, you've got Victoria Nuland, obviously, as Undersecretary of State, Deputy Secretary of State, helping to carry out the Maidan Revolution, overthrow the duly elected president of Ukraine, install the puppet regime, all in service of starting a war with Russia. Victoria Nuland then went on to, you know, enter into the National Endowment for Democracy. Like, these are the kingpins, and it almost doesn't matter what position they're in. I mean, they sort of flit from position to position, or George Soros, you're just sort of this kingpin with a apparently infinite amount of money that you can pour tens of billions of dollars into organizations year over year, despite the fact that you made your money in the late 90s and haven't done much since. I mean, it's like Jeffrey Epstein. It's all like, the details don't even matter that much. What you have to understand is that there is this international cabal that shares money with each other, summons money out of thin air. It's the same people that are running the Fed and BlackRock and Goldman Sachs that are now, you know, in Ukraine. You look at that. That's, again, sort of the epicenter of all of this corruption, which is why when Trump first started looking into it in his first administration, they immediately impeached him in order to stop him from tugging on the string that would unravel the whole sweater. So once you understand that, once you understand that you've got the George Soros network and he's just a node of, that Jeffrey Epstein's a node of, that Victoria Nuland's a node of, and these people are starting wars, switching positions internationally even, Chrystia Freeland going from Canada to Ukraine, but is apparently working hand in hand with George Soros, a Hungarian American. It's an international organization. That's the intelligence community that you always hear so much about. It's not American. It's an intelligence community that's international and it serves our own interest, not yours. Bill Clinton is an important member of this cabal. So once you get brought in, you get all the secrets. It's not easy to kick you out.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss. Was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. All that stopped with the Sea Moss because it's a thyroid issue and it's just... The sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his self-element formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together. and they've worked really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. That I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's
for
good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on, like, my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's
like,
amazing.
Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But, like, no, but our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to, like, the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones when I found him, and I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio, and 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid. So, your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you, because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it, like, happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where, like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, it's not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish sea moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. Nope, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, this is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. One of the other big things happening today, the Supreme Court is deciding whether men can compete in women's sports. Because that's the world we live in right now. Is that the Supreme Court of the United States trying to determine whether men and women are different from one another and whether men's physicality represents an unfair advantage in sports. They're really trying to hammer this out, trying to figure it out. I think tomorrow they're going to really be arguing about whether the sky is blue. They're going to have a week-long discussion about water. Is it wet or not? We're all very confused by all of this. Like, It is kind of hard to cover. Like, are we supposed to take this seriously? Are we supposed to treat this seriously? Like, frankly, I think this data point alone would be enough for George Washington to say, my bad, never mind, we're going back with the English. Something went horribly wrong somewhere along the way. we have to start over now. If you could bring George Washington to 2026, I'm sure everything that you could show him about the modern world would cause a sort of existential terror in him. But the idea that the Supreme Court in 2025 is arguing whether or not men and women are different, because that is the argument at the end of the day. That's it. Are men and women different? Yes. Great. Case closed. This went up to the Supreme Court. And some of the Supreme Court justices are very confused. They're very confused. Justice Brown Jackson faceplants in a bizarre word salad of a question while trying to defend boys and girls sports, gets schooled by Idaho AG. Then Justice Gorsuch steps in. And there's been a couple audio pieces that have come out about this, you know, come out from the discussions here. And you understand the reason why it's so absurd that this is being questioned is because the entire idea of transgenderism is predicated on the gender part, that somehow sex, your biological sex, is something distinct and separate from your gender, which is your social, the social manifestation of your sex. And so that's what, you know, like, that's what transgender is predicated on. That's what the whole idea is. And the whole time that the arguments about transgenderism have been raging, there's been an understanding that there's a difference between the gender expression of an individual and their biological sex. Yeah, I'm speaking in their language now, right? When you're talking about sports, you're not talking about social acceptance. You're talking about scientific reality. When you're talking about medicine, you're not talking about their gender expression. You're talking about biological sex. So why is this even a part of the conversation? The whole idea is, oh, how you present socially and how people treat you and whether they reference you as a boy or a girl or whether, like, that's a completely separate discussion than are men and women physiologically separate from one another, which the answer is undeniably yes. So the fact that this is even, that this ever became part of the conversation, if transgender activists were honest in the first place, the minute sports came up, they would say, no, we shouldn't be involved in sports. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. What we're talking about is social acceptance. And okay, if somebody wants to wear a dress, you should treat them as a woman. And if they present as a woman, you should treat them like that out of respect for them. But sports, no, that's like a physical scientific thing. It's like men are just stronger and their bones are thicker than women. Like, this is just a fact. If transgender activists were honest, even in the slightest, then this whole sport controversy would never even have been an issue. But it's about destroying these systems. It's about taking this as far as you possibly can to disrupt not just the social fabric of our society, but like the underlying fundamental reality itself. It really exposes what all of this transgenderism is about. Because again, if it was about social acceptance, if it was about what they claim it's about, gender, not sex, then sports would have never entered into the conversation. But this sports conversation has now gone up to the Supreme Court of the United States because we can't figure out whether or not men have an advantage over women. It is beyond absurd. We have a clip from this. Let's go to clip 10 here. This is DEI Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson firing back at the Red State Communicator. Man, can you imagine how successful we would be? Can you imagine FinfoWars? Well, we'll get there. We'll get slowly but surely. We've replaced one with a woman. Slowly but surely, we will all be replaced by women. Let's listen to Ketanji Brown Jackson struggle to deal with basic reality. Let's watch.
Is that right?
I think to some degree, but it's also, Your Honor, it's just because we're indifferent to a person's gender identity and applying the law.
But the law actually operates differently, I think, for cisgender women and transgender women. That is, with respect to their desire to play on a team that matches their gender identity, cisgender women can do it, transgender women cannot. And so we do appreciate a distinction, I think, that is being drawn on the basis of your gender status, gender identity status, trans or cis, right?
So and I want to make sure I understand if we're operating in Title IX world or equal protection world, because I think it might make a difference to the answer. But
let's start with Title IX.
So Title IX, I think the question of, I look at this statute and see a distinction between boy and girl indifferent to gender identity. And I think that...
Right, but I'm testing that proposition, right? You see that distinction, and I see it, too, on the separation of teams level at the beginning.
Right, and I think what I'm hearing is that that distinction arises from a difference in effect, and I don't see a disparate impact analysis that's sort of hidden away in Title IX.
But why is that a difference in effect? So it's like a second-order discrimination, right? The first order is separating male from female.
Right.
The second order is separating transgender women from cisgender women, right?
Respectfully, I would disagree, Your Honor. The reason why is just because I think anytime you have a classification, you could divide it into subclassifications, and I don't think that then becomes, like, the law in the same way applies to brown-haired biological girls and blonde-headed biological girls.
No, I understand, but I don't think you can get, I'm not sure, and maybe this is switching to the equal protection, I don't think you can get out of the
the hell are we doing? So if I understand correctly, she thinks there's a difference between trans women and cis women when it comes to sports. It's not. You can call them trans, you can call them cis, you can call them monkeys, you can call them anything. It doesn't matter. The underlying biology doesn't change. I don't think she understands that. How does she not understand that? Do you see what's happening here? Do you get it? It is just pure insanity. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we talking about? How is this what our society is engaged in at this moment? It's retarded. It's retarded. Our entire, like, the definition of retarded. Maybe that's not even the right word. It's worse than that. Because we haven't just slowed or stopped, like the word retard is supposed to be used. We've actually gone backwards so far that I don't even know if there's ever even been a time in the world where people didn't know that men and women were different. I think we may have gone back to the point where we were some sort of primordial ooze. Because this is fundamental to reality, and we've seemingly lost grasp of that. It's really kind of terrifying. Mostly it's just annoying, though. Mostly it's really just annoying that we even have to have these conversations. And that is maybe the biggest, damnation of it all, that we just have to endlessly argue these points for some reason. Like, why are we arguing any of these points? There's got to be a way. There's got to be a way that we can just be ruled by people that recognize reality and keep out the people that don't. Like, is there no way that we can build a system to establish that? It's just so weird because they first, like, inject it with all of this academic speak, whatever, right? Well, we're not talking about biological sex here. We're talking about gender expression, which is different because those are based on socioeconomic perspectives that are, and it's just like, okay, so, all right, so you recognize that there are biological differences, but you're saying that culturally the expression of the sex is the gender. Okay, so there is a difference, but it gets so discombobulated and confusing to the point where they are now denying biological reality between men and women, which is something entirely different than transgenderism. It's just basic stupidity. It's just basic, lie? I don't know. I mean, it's just not true. And it's not accurate, and it has nothing to do with social constructs. It's just fact of life. Like, what are we doing here? What is this? What has gone wrong? Where's the reset button? What are we doing? What are we doing here? I don't know, man. I don't know how you're supposed to, like, care about any of this stuff when our Supreme Court can't determine whether or not men are men and women are women. It's hard to really care about anything else, to be honest with you. Because it's all like this. I mean, everything, absolutely everything we deal with is exactly this simple. And for some reason, the vast majority of the world apparently has been driven completely and utterly insane. And, you know, I don't know, man. I really don't know what to do about any of this anymore. We've got stories like this. Trump has complained about Pam Bondi repeatedly to aides. Like Trump today gave a big speech. There are all these clips of Trump. And like, honestly, I don't care. Like, does anybody listening to me, do you care what President Trump said? He said something about Ilhan Omar. Whew. Okay. But she's still a congresswoman. Okay. She's still worth tens of millions of dollars for some reason. Okay, great. So who cares what he says? Oh, well, he said something about, I don't know, something else. It's like, who cares? Like, who cares? Because he's not, because it's not the same. It's different when you're not the president and you're on the campaign trail and you're saying things. It can seem exciting because there's a chance that it's going to come true. Now you are president, so I can't really bring myself to care about the threats that you're making because you're in power right now and you're not doing it. So I've decided, just as you know, professional stance, I'm just going to stop talking about what they're saying. And one day, God willing, they'll do something and I'll report on that. All right. The minute Trump actually does something successfully, then I will eagerly report that. Until then, I really don't care what else they have to say. And stories like this. Trump has complained about Pam Bondi repeatedly to aides. Well, okay. And? what? Does he think the aides can fire her? Is he under the impression that the aides are the ones that are in charge? Trump has repeatedly criticized Attorney General Pam Bondi for perceived ineffectiveness. Perceived? What do you mean perceived? Can you show me her effectiveness in reality? It doesn't exist. Her perceived ineffectiveness in pursuing his agenda, including prosecuting former investigators. Trump's frustration includes Pam Bondi's handling of the Jeffrey Epstein files and the Justice Department's perceived slow progress on election-related investigations. Despite public praise from Trump and his allies, Bondi is reportedly losing support among some of Trump's loyal voters because of a lack of perceived action. President Trump has repeatedly criticized Attorney General Pam Bondi for perceived ineffectiveness in pursuing his... Like, this is how I feel... Is like, you remember that show, what was it, Hell's Kitchen? Right, a guy goes into the chef, whatever his name is, goes into a failing restaurant and he has to tell them what they're doing wrong. It's like, imagine going into a restaurant and they're serving piles of cow poop on plates. It's like, what? I'm not going to do this episode. Like, this is stupid. You don't need me to tell you that, like, you're serving poop on a plate. No one's going to eat this. What are you talking about? Do you know what I mean? It's like the problems that you're dealing with are so fundamentally easy to solve. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? I mean, you can pick any metaphor that we use. The house is on fire. Try, you know, spraying water on it. Yeah, Kitchen Nightmares with Gordon Ramsay. If I, you know... There were some bad restaurants there, right? Mold in the ice machine. Rude waiters, you know, just using stale food, that sort of stuff. But did you ever go into a restaurant and it's just like there's no chairs or tables? There's no waiters. They don't have a stove. And it's just like a bucket of slime that they scoop stuff out of and throw it at people. And it's like, well, you're doing nothing right. You're doing absolutely nothing that you're supposed to be doing. Absolutely nothing is happening the way it's supposed to. So where are we even supposed to start? As far as I can tell, it's not even a restaurant. This is not even an elected representation of what we voted for. And I don't know. It's a stupid metaphor, but it's just like it would be one thing if there were these big challenges that we were having to try to solve if, like, you know, they're filing stuff repeatedly and it's getting sent back. And they're trying to get rid of the, you know, judges that are making those decisions. But then other people are interfering. Like, okay, if it was this really strong battle back and forth, but again, every day I feel like I come in here and I'm like, the house is still on fire. The hose is right there and they just haven't connected it to the fire hydrant yet. Yeah. Trump's being an idiot sandwich right now. That's what he's being. So I'm sorry. It's just like, how many times are we going to have to read headlines like this? I can't teach you that because it's common sense. I mean, literally, what are we doing here? I'm trying to imagine, like, if I had an employee that I hired, and it's like I hire them to make cuts and edits of the show and then upload them, and it's just like a year later they haven't uploaded a single video. I paid them to come into the office every single day. Every single day they're at a computer with editing software open, but they have not once uploaded a single video. And every week or so, you know, the rumor goes around the office. It's like, oh, Harrison's kind of mad that this new guy's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Oh, you better light a fire under there. And it's just no videos get uploaded ever, ever for a year. And it's like, so what are we doing here? What are we doing? Is that a big problem that would be hard to solve? It just, I don't know, man. It's really hard to care about any of this. This month, Trump has talked with allies about how he could appoint a special counsel to the Justice Department because he's so frustrated with what he sees as slow progress of the work. People familiar with the matter said, chief among his grievances is what he sees as Bondi's failure to quickly and effectively prosecute the investigators who had pursued him for years, including former FBI Director James Comey, New York Attorney General Letitia James. The officials and others familiar with his complaints said both criminal cases were dismissed in November by a judge who said the Trump aide who secured the indictment had been improperly appointed to her post. Trump has wanted to see the cases continue quickly. And they don't tell you the full story about how there was already somebody that was accurately appointed, but he was family friends with the Comeys, so he slow walked the whole thing. So again, you know, do we just say the same stuff over and over? It just goes on and on. Folks are desperate for action and just haven't seen it, says Steve Bannon, providing a list of topics that the president's supporters want her to bring more cases on, including the 2020 election, Justice Department's investigation, the Trump campaign ties to Russia and the 2016 election. I mean, yeah, those were the things that were, you know, treason. Those were the treasonous things that were done to try to stop the peaceful transfer of power. So yeah, those should be on the top of the list, but it's just, you're barely scratching the surface of what has actually gone on, because not only do you have the Russia collusion hoax, which was absolutely massive and huge, obviously you have the Hunter Biden laptop situation. Nobody's been punished for that, which obviously was a gigantic deal. You have the stolen 2020 election. You have the January 6th committee, and that whole thing was entirely fraudulent, and they destroyed people's, you know, liberties and punish them without ever achieving a conviction. But you've also got the traitor Alejandro Mayorkas that opened up the border and flooded our country with tens of millions of people, totally against law. He had no right to do that, but he did it anyway. You've got, I mean, it just goes on and on. Like, this is just off the top of my head, and I'm barely scratching the surface. I could probably name 50 different people that, like, we know they've committed crimes. It's not speculation. It's not revenge. It's not vindictiveness. It's James Comey leaking information illegally and then lying about it under oath. We can't charge him for that. Letitia James just clearly bending the rules to try to get a conviction on Donald Trump, despite that being, again, just a flagrant violation of the oath that she took to impose the law fairly. So, but then you charge her with, you know, mortgage fraud. Yeah, I'd be frustrated too, Trump. I'd be a hell of a lot more frustrated. And you got to wonder, like, are these stories being planted to try to light a fire under Pam Bondi? Like, just what is going on? Just what is going on? You hired somebody who just is not doing their job. Has not once done a single aspect of their job. So there we are. That's what we got so far. It's great. Trump has ordered 2,500 Somalis out of the country by March amid a fallout from Minnesota fraud scheme. The White House is ending TPS for Somalia, meaning thousands of Somalis in the U.S. under that program must leave after an alleged fraud scheme exploded in Minnesota and made national headlines. Those affected must leave the country by March 17th. There are roughly 2,500 Somalis in the U.S. under TPS. DHS sources revealed to Fox News just under 1,400 of those are in the country with pending applications. An estimated 24% of them reside in Minnesota, where Immigration and Customs Enforcement has been carrying out deportation operations in recent weeks. Somalia is one of the poorest and most dangerous countries in the world, which has been destabilized by clan division, insurgent groups, and humanitarian crisis since the central government collapsed there in the 1990s. So obviously we want as many of them over here as possible. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know why they would leave. Right? I mean, what, are they just going to leave now? You just tell them, okay, your TPS is revoked. You have to go home now. And they're just going to do that? Are you kidding me? I seriously doubt it. Haitians, Colombians, Venezuelans, Chinese, Africans, Filipinos, Mexicans, Indians, British, and Europeans all polled more positively when it came to asking about Somali immigrants' impacts on the United States. I just, you know, why do we have any migrants here at all? It's just not an issue. We have no obligation to provide anything for them ever. Why are we doing it? What is the point? What do we benefit from it? We don't. It's all being done to destroy us. I think maybe I'll get into that in the next hour. I am going to open up your phone calls, of course. But again, I feel like maybe we got to go back to the fundamentals. I was talking to my wife yesterday. I was like, oh, yeah, it was really cool. I interviewed a member of European Parliament for Germany. She's like, oh, about what? And I'm like, oh, you know, just like the free speech and the fact that like German infrastructure is collapsing. And, you know, the guy I interviewed had his house raided 27 times just because he's a opposition politician. And she's like, what? She's like, why are they doing that? Like, why are they trying to destroy Europe? And it's like, that is a very deep question. But if you can answer that question, you can sort of decode the entire world and the last 200 years or so of history. Why are they trying to destroy Europe? What would compel somebody to so permanently damage a country like Germany or France or the UK beyond repair? Destroying their infrastructure, destroying their people, letting millions of their women be raped. Like, who would do that and why? If you can answer that question, everything else kind of falls into place, actually, because the reality is it's about fear. It's about fear of what Europeans are capable of. We'll get into I'll touch on this on the other side, because I do think we need to get back to the fundamentals. People don't understand why these things are happening. They seem so inexplicable.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it with your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWarsStore.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, Make No Peace with Evil, same Crusader King, and then Do Like That Still Image of Me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's a InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy, in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before they're hatched. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
No matter how much smarter you are than me, I will still always have one thing over you, and that's treachery. Right? That's the one thing that old people excel at is treachery.
In the United States federal law, sedition primarily refers to seditious conspiracy under 18 U.S. Code 2384. This occurs when two or more persons conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States.
We have soldiers in training and prepared to be deployed if necessary. I remind you, a warning order is a heads up for folks. And these National Guard troops are our National Guard troops.
Because you work at the federal government, that you somehow have absolute immunity from committing crimes? That's not true in any law school in America, whether it's Yale or Villanova or anywhere else. That's not true.
Show up and use your voice. Put your body on the line.
Our Constitution, written by our founders, is intended to protect us against a threat identical to Donald Trump, someone who seeks power at all costs to get more power.
If any of them want to come in this city and commit a crime, you will not be able to hide. Nobody will whisk you off. You don't want this smoke, because we will bring it to you. And the fake, whatever they call them, because I can't say the name, but the criminal in the White House would not be able to keep you from going to jail.
No, people are out marching and all today, and we need to speak up. We need to be out there and shut this rogue government down, because it's just awful what they're doing to people.
There's what's called the 3.5% rule, which is that if you look at authoritarian regimes of various kinds all over the world, over the last like century, once you have 3.5% of a population protesting nonviolently against a dictator or an authoritarian, that is essentially an unstoppable force that they can't oppose, and that precludes them from consolidating dictatorial power.
3.5%.
3.5%. It's not that much larger a number than what we're already seeing in the streets against Trump.
Levy war against the United States.
And it's clear. Look, I don't think any governor in history has had to fight a war against the federal government every single day.
Well, I said this yesterday. We've never been at war with our federal government.
Opposed by force, the authority of the United States.
Minnesota will not allow our community to be used as a prop in a national political fight. We will not take the bait.
Why are people showing up in vehicles, in convoys, not just in Minneapolis, but all over the country in an effort to obstruct lawful federal law enforcement activities?
Prevent, hinder, or delay by force the execution of any U.S. law, or seize or possess by force any property of the United States contrary to its authority.
I'm far enough away. I'm not influenced by anything.
Do you live on this street?
I don't, no.
Okay, I need you to get in your...
No, I won't.
Ma'am, I need you to leave.
It's my right to be here.
Back up out of the
way. I will not.
One of our cars as well. You were too close right now. You were interfering.
I'm right here.
Federal investigation.
You're going to get out of my face. I'm a public citizen. No, I won't. Tell me why I'm far enough away from your investigation.
Step beyond our cars.
Don't touch me, please.
Let me say to this federal agencies and ICE, this is Oregon. We do not need you. You're not welcome. And you need to get the hell out of our community.
I don't know where people got the notion that if you disagree with our immigration laws, it is okay to oppose federal law enforcement. It is not okay. It is illegal. And if you use your car to ram a police officer or a federal agent, they're going to use deadly force. So people need to know this is not a game.
The definition of treason is explicitly defined in the U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, and codified in 18 U.S. Code 2381, consisting of levying war against the United States or adhering to the enemies of the United States, giving them aid and comfort.
No matter what you do to me, you can arrest me or not. I am going to document your illegal actions. Because if there is no accountability today, there will be accountability tomorrow.
Dude, I'm going to war. I'm going to war.
I'm going to war. I'm putting down the Crawler Donut and the Dunkin' Donuts beverage, and I am going to war. Mark my words, Hegseth. I'm coming for you.
RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity. The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. It is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. I thought this tweet from Dissident West was very much how I feel. From at Dissident West on Twitter. Not trying to sound blackpilled, but it's becoming increasingly obvious this administration's goal is not mass deportations. It's to turn the public off from that idea so it's never even mentioned again. Everything they do, from the deportation edits to stuff like this, and it's a video of them arresting like a 17-year-old working at Target or something, is to create the worst optics imaginable so that the Overton window shifts back to where it was before. If deportations were their actual way, were their actual goal, there's a million better ways to do it that wouldn't come off as so openly cruel. Either that or they're grotesquely incompetent, but I don't think that's the case. And then, I've heard other people, I saw a clip from Nick Fuentes' show yesterday where he's going, you guys are crying crocodile tears at this dumb lady that got shot trying to run a cop over. Like, what? You got to harden your hearts. Or other people, well, we are Trump supporters, but these deportations, we really can't stand. And it's not that I'm against deportations because I think they're particularly cruel or something. I don't. I think these people are criminals and they can leave the country whenever they want. It's not actually that hard to not find yourself in this situation. You have to really make a lot of deliberate choices to find yourself here. So I don't actually feel bad for them at all. But I am concerned about the ability of the left to portray this as something brutal. I don't like that they seem to be doing stuff that is designed to deliberately aggravate the left. I don't think it's the most efficient or effective use of manpower. And it's certainly, it's not a question that the rate at which deportations are happening, we're not even making a dent. We're not even making a dent. We deported like 300,000 people this year. 10 times that would be necessary just to get us back to where we were in 2020, which even that I might even be underselling it. Like, we might even need more than that to get back to where we were. And that doesn't even count the fact that illegal immigration was such a big issue that it was the number one thing Trump talked about when he was getting elected in 2016. So just to get back to 2016 numbers, we'd need like millions and millions a day. So the deportations are not happening fast enough, but they are happening in a way that provides for the most amount of chaos, the most amount of interference, the most amount of dangerous situations where people can and have been hurt or killed. So is that the plan? Is that what they're doing? And can you sort of apply this to everything Trump is doing? When he says either they're grossly incompetent or this is on purpose, kind of the same thing. And maybe at the end of the day, that'll be a good thing. Maybe at the end of the day, that really is what we need. Maybe we really do need to just fully lose hope in our system so we can stop relying on it and form something new. Maybe in the long run, this is a positive. I would have liked to see seen Trump cross the Rubicon, go all in, start up a new, you know, law enforcement agency, sick it on his enemies, charge them with the crimes they've committed in courts with judges you can trust, and just get it done. That would have been really, really wonderful. But at this point, it really seems like the lesson that they're trying to teach America is like this whole voting for somebody that's against us thing doesn't work. Voting for somebody that's going to, you know, totally rearrange things and set things right, it's not actually possible in this system. So you might as well just vote for Jeb. You might as well just vote for Lindsey or something so you can at least get yours. But yeah, we just need to, I guess, come to terms with Trump's failure at this point. It's been a year and it's not getting any better. And it's actually only getting worse, and it's particularly disheartening because we see what awaits us. We see, you know, what's coming next. If you look at Australia, which has always been the testing ground for the New World Order, since the gun control confiscation in the 90s, I mean, that's been where they roll out their most authoritarian control systems. From Glycine Nationalist on X, everybody in the Anglosphere, America and Western Europe needs to be watching what's going on in Australia. The government is passing there under parliamentary urgency the most draconian and illiberal, quote, anti-hate censorship and repression laws in the entire Western world. Australia will soon be more repressive than Britain or Germany. A true multicultural police state, the government is using the Bondi massacre by Islamists who killed not only Jewish people but white Australians to justify going after the nationalist right. These new laws will take effect retroactively and essentially allow the Home Office Minister to ban any right-wing organization that it does not like. Breaking these laws will carry a penalty of 7 years in prison. It says the point of the legislation in Australia is to make nationalism illegal effectively and to demoralize nationalists into accepting mass migration. They're going to make examples out of NSN, which is the National Socialist Party there in Australia, in order to terrorize the Australian people. This is left-wing state terrorism. That's exactly what it is. And again, like maybe this also will turn out to be a good thing, because what's happened already is that the nationalist organizations in Australia are already disbanding, because they're basically saying that if this group exists when this law goes into effect, they'll all be charged with crimes. Just being a part of a group, you don't have to actually ever have committed a crime. It's just they label a group as now illegal, and anybody who's a member of that group has therefore committed a crime. So obviously this is just blatant government repression of a political perspective. There's really no other way to view this. But do you think the people that are in these groups are going to stop their efforts? I mean, they'll just have to go underground. Maybe it'll be a good thing. You know, maybe this will, you know, prepare people for the future, because things are only getting worse. They're only getting more authoritarian, more restrictive. Maybe it'll be useful to learn how to communicate in secret, to keep things offline, to build networks in the shadows that you don't make public at all, because even awareness of the group will mean a crackdown by authorities. So some tactics are going to have to change, but it's absolutely brutal what Australia is implementing with their Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate, and Extremism bill. This is a thread from Australians versus the Agenda. The Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate, and Extremism Bill 2026 has been published, and it's worse than you think. It criminalizes speech that merely causes fear, even if no harm occurs. 5 years in prison. 5 years in prison for causing fear. Whatever that means. They call it the exposure draft that's been leaked to the public. It defines public place so broadly that it includes the internet, meaning posts, video, tweets, memes, and blogs all fall within the scope. So again, basically they're saying you can't say certain things in public. And what they mean by public is any electronic communication whatsoever. A person commits an offense if A, the person engages in conduct in a public place, and B, the person engages in the conduct intending to, one, promote or incite hatred of another person or group of persons because of the race, color, national, or ethnic origin of the target or target group, or two, disseminate ideas of superiority over or hatred of another group or person or group of persons because of the race, color, national, or ethnic group or target group. But obviously not white people. I mean, obviously they're not going to go after brown people for causing hatred of white people. After all, we've gone viral pretty recently. It was the Australian neighborhood with a big mural of a brown girl killing a white guy in a British uniform. I seriously doubt that will come under the purview of this. In fact, I'm almost certain it won't. The law states it's irrelevant whether hatred actually occurs or whether anyone truly felt fear. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It says definitions in this section. Engages in conduct in a public place without limiting. When a person engages in conduct in a public place, a person engages the conduct in a public place if the person communicates to the public using any form of communication, graffiti, playing recorded material, or broadcasting your information. For the purpose of subsection 1, it is immaterial whether A, the target or members of the target group actually are distinguished by their particular race, color, national, or ethnic group, or B, the conduct actually results in hatred of another person or group of persons, or C, the conduct actually results in any person feeling intimidated, feeling harassment or violence, or fearing for their safety. What? So they are literally making anything and everything illegal. They're saying it's illegal to cause hatred or fear, but also you don't actually have to cause hatred or fear to be guilty. What? That's just literally doesn't make any sense. I mean, how do you even justify that? It's immaterial whether the people are actually distinguished by a particular race, color, national, ethnic origin. So it's like you're not allowed to target a specific person on the basis of the national origin, but it's immaterial whether that's actually the case or not. Okay, what is this law? You are guilty of displaying a prohibited symbol unless you can prove a religious, academic, or journalistic exemption. Gee, I wonder what symbols they mean there. Critics condemn loopholes. Well, there are loopholes. There are very deliberate and expansive loopholes specifically carved out for the people that committed the terrorist attack that this law is being based on. Wrap your mind around that one. The AFP minister can declare prohibited groups without procedural fairness, including relying on retroactive conduct. That power can extend to actions that occurred outside Australia. Penalties include up to 7 years in prison if you have membership in a prohibited group, sentences to as much as 15 years for supporting, training, recruiting, or funding a banned group. And hate preachers get a loophole exemption for the purpose of religious teaching or discussion. So the hate speech law that's being passed on the basis of this Islamist attack in Bondi Beach is to basically criminalize white Australians from advocating for themselves. From OzPill at Oz_pill. Australia's response to the Islamic attack on Bondi Beach just dropped, and there's not one mention of Islam, instead, it seems to specifically protect Islamic hate preachers via religious exemptions. The bill otherwise vaguely cracks down on free speech and right-wing political organizations in the name of, quote, combating anti-Semitism. There's heaps of insane stuff like criminalizing speech based on fear, including if it was on the internet, ministers being able to list organizations as prohibited hate groups based on retrospective evidence without procedural fairness and with jail time ranging from 7 to 14 years as a consequence of assisting or being a member of such groups. Far-right political groups have already been earmarked to fall under this designation. Our so-called conservative party, the Liberal Party, has already vowed to support the bill. It's unknown how many other supposedly right-wing parties will do the same. They are literally using an Islamic terror attack to go after free speech and right-wing groups, things that they wanted to do regardless, now that they have the moral justification of, quote, combating anti-Semitism, which they hope will fool large swaths of regular Aussies into blindly agreeing with egregious attacks on our society. If this bill goes to a debate, the bill goes to a debate in the coming days. Heaps more info on the bill and resources on political in Australian politics in this thread. So, I mean, again, you know, it's just, it's as insane as everything else we cover. Some people are looking at this, you know, the silver lining on the cloud, like I just said, you know, this will actually sharpen the ability of the National Socialists there in Australia to operate under the radar, but it will obviously massively hamper. But again, there is nothing explicit about, you know, a group like the National Socialists, sort of like the neo-Nazi, I guess you could call them, party, and your average Australian patriot or any conservative group. Essentially, all they're saying is that if you aren't in favor of your people's displacement and dispossession of your country, then you're a hate group. Like, if you're against migrants at any level for any reason, you're a hate group. So they're just codifying right now in Australia the political landscape where only deconstructionist, only anti-white, anti-European, anti-Australian, anti-American people can actually have a voice and speak out. And they're actually making it illegal to organize if you're not one of those groups. This is a fundamental attack on the very concept of freedom of speech, freedom of conscience in the Western world. And we really have to oppose this with everything we've got. And it is coming here if we aren't careful. And I've got some videos about this. Guys, do you have time to censor clip 23? Let's go to clip 23 here.
The massive failing that is Australia's multicultural soup and the immigration Ponzi scheme that we run here created guys like this who perpetrate events like mass shootings on a Jewish event in Australia. And in order to combat that, our government decides to push through emergency legislation that's going to empower this guy, the Minister for Home Affairs, who loves mass immigration and whose electorate is in a place where 60% of the households don't have English as a first language. They're going to decide who is and isn't the enemy in society anymore, and then they're going to bring down the full force of the law against them. This legislation will create a new framework that will enable the Minister for Home Affairs to list organisations as prohibited hate groups. And once an organisation is listed, it will be a criminal offence to be a member, recruit for, donate to it, or receive funds that support that group in any way. I'll go out on a limb here and assume that that's going to be anyone who disagrees with mass immigration and the Nazis, because, you know, the Nazis are dangerous. The unification of Australia continues unabated by your elected officials. What's even is that it has bipartisan support. We don't effectively have an opposition party in Australia. It was pretty clear to me last year, especially after October 19th, that they were going to do everything they could to try and shut down the end mass immigration movement in Australia. It was pretty obvious to me. I knew that they were going to start locking people up. The fact that they threw Joel Davis in jail and they've effectively kept him as a political prisoner, regardless of how I might feel about him and the organisation that he represents, is completely and utterly wrong, and it shouldn't be happening. However, it's about to get 100 times worse. They're going to be locking up people left, right and centre. In fact, I can't even guarantee that I won't be on a list to be locked up. However, I'm trying to play a straight bat here and work within the system and the framework that these keep creating for us, as hard as that may be. If you're operating on the fringes and if you are going to do that's considered spicy, I would suspect that you're probably going to end up in jail. And I'll be honest with you. If you end up in jail, if you end up dead, if you end up losing everything you own in this game, this game of thrones for control of our country, then you've lost the game. If it looks like that's where you're about to end up, then you should seriously consider the way you're playing the game, because you're going to lose. I believe that we can win without losing everything, without going to jail and without everybody dying. However, we all need to do this together. That's why you should join the Australian Lobby Group.
The problem is that the game is rigged. the game is rigged and the game you're playing, they're changing the rules to say that you can't play anymore. Do you understand? It might be time to stop playing within the rules to a large degree. And so again, maybe this will be a mistake down the line. But let's go to clip 33 here, because this explains that the religious exemptions will apply to Jews and Islamists in Australia, but not Christians. Okay, let's watch.
Where you've spoken about expressions of race, color, and national or ethnic origin. And it says on the fourth line there, for example, those of Jewish origin would be protected by the offence. Given that Jewish people, I could convert to Judaism, how then do you suggest that you'll be protecting Jewish people of different ethnic origins under this legislation?
So for this offence, that reference draws on the Racial Discrimination Act, it is in that context these terms have been found to encompass Jewish people, also Sikhs, as ethno-religious groups.
Okay. So you would be satisfied that using that basis, that people chanting gas the Jews or death to Jews, that would encompass that group of people, despite them, you know, it might be a Ukrainian Jewish person or a person from Israel?
Yes, so we're satisfied that reference to persons or groups distinguished by race, colour, or national or ethnic origin encompasses Jewish people.
Okay, what about other religious groups? Would it protect, I'm Catholic, would it protect Catholic people?
I mentioned that I think there has been consideration that it will apply to Sikhs as also an ethno-religious group. And in other contexts, it would depend on the broader range of characteristics. Being Catholic alone would not constitute race, colour, national, ethnic origin, but might be that in certain circumstances, if there are broader other considerations that meant those individuals formed part of one of those groups, that would be covered.
What about Christians more broadly then? Would that be considered covered by this legislation? Would that group be considered protected by this legislation?
As just an entire group of Christians, that wouldn't be, but there could be particular Christian groups that might pick up those characteristics.
Okay, so there you go. Does this apply to Jews? Yes, absolutely. Does it apply to Sikhs? Yep, they are an ethno-religious group. Well, what about Catholics and Christians? Nope, doesn't protect them. Okay. Okay, great. Really hard to see what you're doing here. So, I mean, that's it for Australia, pretty much. I mean, they're literally making it illegal to advocate for white Australians' continuing existence while empowering every other group with not just the ability to say whatever the hell they want, no matter how hateful it is, but the money to do it, too, as they're all getting grants from the Australian government as we speak. So it's a takeover, and it's almost complete. Wake up now, or that's it, Australia. More on the other side. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to the land down under, where everything's retarded, where everything's stupid and backwards, as put on display there during the Olympics. I'm actually going to take your calls for the second half of today's episode of the War Room. I am going to ask that our regular callers hold off. I know you got us on speed dial, but if you've never gotten on the show before, if you've never called in or never made it on the show, give us a call. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539, and we'll take your calls. I want to continue on the Australian hate speech bill for a little bit. Let's go to clip 39 now, because this, I think, again, just exposes the absurdity of the law that Australia is attempting to pass as we speak. Let's watch.
You know, policing speech and the hate speech has been on the cusp for a long time, and I think we were all hoping and praying that it wouldn't actually come through. But like you said, they kind of this week rammed it through under, like you said, the Trojan horse of anti-Semitism. It is 100% what they've used to push this legislation in. And I think it was Craig Kelly who said, you know, you can go to prison for 7 years now for saying we have to beat Labor. You know, like theoretically.
No, look, but, if anyone brings that case, but seriously.
They will. This is the problem with this sort of precedent. You know, we have to kick them out. Like where does it end? Who gets to define these arbitrary laws? Who defines what hate speech is? Who defines what hate symbols are? I would actually push back a little bit on what you said, Caleb, in that some of the legislation you think was good in terms of displaying terrorist symbols. Because if you look up in the USA, the ADL's list of what they deem as terrorism symbols or hate symbols, one of them is White Lives Matter. The other one is Thor's hammer. A third one is Celtic crosses. Being Celt myself, I find, like, it's outrageous to me that there is somebody in some form of authority somewhere across the world who deems a Celtic cross as a form of hate symbol. And so you've got to always look at what precedes and hopefully heed warning and example. And if you look across the world, what's happening, we would be naive and stupid to think that it isn't possible happening here. I mean, who defines this? See, because if people are afraid to speak out loud and they think they're going to end up in prison, we're not going to be able to discuss ideas. We can't say, you know what, immigration is a bad idea because that could be racist. We're not allowed to say that. I think it's really bad women are in, you know, trans women are in, you know, biological women sports because then we're, you know, some kind of phobe. Like, where does it end? And I think it's very dangerous. Fear is enough to curb democracy. And if everyday Australians are fearful that they can't speak freely and discuss these hard ideas, then they're not going to have a proper democracy here. And we're literally ruled by whoever deems whatever is hate in a court of law.
There you go. Evelyn Ray, we'll lose our home, we'll lose our people, we'll lose our culture, because basically it's whoever decides what hate is. And it can change. And, you know, once you allow them to determine one thing is hate and therefore not a valid political position to have, it's going to expand, and it's going to expand rapidly. And, you know, sure, the, you know, National Socialists have shut down their network and shut down their group. Do you think they're going to be the only ones that are targeted by this? Whatever other group comes next, I mean, this is about actually shutting that Overton window, like drawing a hardcore line and going, you're allowed to talk about and advocate things up to this point, but beyond that, it's illegal and you'll go to jail. And we aren't going to tell you exactly where that line is. So you be careful not to cross, or else you and your entire group and everybody in your group is going to jail. Because now, since you said that one thing, now your group is a hate group. Now everybody in your group is a criminal. So don't cross that line, or else you and everybody you're a part of will be arrested. And even if it doesn't go that far, you can just look at what they're doing with like AFD in Germany. If a right-wing group gets popular, it'll be allowed to get popular up to a certain point, and then suddenly it will become dangerous. It'll become a hate monger group. And whoever's in charge of that particular moment will be able to claim that they are hateful and shut them down. Now, the flip side of this would be that you could like rewrite this law to not have all of the explicit carve-outs and caveats for Islamists, and then you could, you know, arrest them for their speech. I would hate to see this become a, you know, arms race of who can ban their enemies' ideas first, but right now it's just one side is banning the other side's ideas. Maybe we need to take a lesson from that, perhaps. We got a few more videos about this. Let's go to clip 29 here. This is George Mamelis saying Australia is in no way a democracy. Let's watch.
Watch this. The bill is a combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremism bill. It's a comprehensive package of reforms which creates serious offences for hate preachers and leaders seeking to radicalise young Australians. It increases the penalties for hate crimes offences. It ensures that offenders whose crimes were motivated by extremism have that factored into their sentencing. It creates a new offence for inciting hatred in order to intimidate or harass. It expands and strengthens the ban on prohibited symbols, and it makes it easier for the Minister for Home Affairs to cancel or refuse a visa for people intent on spreading hatred. And it creates a new framework that will enable the Minister for Home Affairs to list organisations as prohibited hate groups. Once an organisation is listed, it will be a criminal offence to be a member, to recruit for it, to donate or receive funds or support that group in any way. The legislation will also set up the National Guns Buyback Scheme, bringing Australia's world-leading gun laws into the 21st century. The terrorists at Bondi Beach had hatred in their minds, but guns in their hands. This law will deal with both.
I warned all of you that we're going to use the NSN to call these laws in. This Prime Minister has done more damage to the Australian people than two radical Islamists ever could with guns. Now the Prime Minister has recalled Parliament early to rush through what is the most extreme speech laws Australia has ever seen. The so-called Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate and Extremism Bill 2026. But here's what they don't want discussed. These laws introduce a built-in exemption that allows hate preachers to escape punishment as long as what they say is framed as religious teaching or religious discussion. Islam can still spread. Ordinary Australians can be punished for symbols or speech, while extremist preaching is protected by a religious purpose loophole. And here's the truth no one wants to admit. The window to stop this is already closing. Parliament is performative. The Prime Minister controls the lower house. The deals are already done in the upper house. Next week isn't democracy, it's theatre. Let's be honest about who these laws fall on. Ordinary Australians. People speaking about what they're seeing in their own communities. Rising crime, social breakdown, public disorder, practices imported from overseas that clash with Australian values. A country is not a democracy when speech exists only by permission. God bless Australia.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is getting bad all across Western Europe. So bad, the Pope is even sounding off about it. Pope Leo, free speech is being eliminated in the West under Orwellian-style censorship. Pope Leo the, what is that, 14th, used his annual address to foreign diplomats at the Vatican to issue a stark warning that struck to the heart of the Western political order. The first American pontiff cautioned that freedom of expression in the West is contracting under the liberal globalist banner of so-called progress and inclusion. According to the Pope, Western societies for a long time have drifted and continued to drift towards enforced consensus rather than open debate. He's exactly right. It's getting really bad. Of course, we had the member of the AfD on yesterday, talking about how bad it's getting in Germany. He reminded us that today, a editor-in-chief of the Alternative for Germany newsletter or, you know, newspaper is now facing a very long time in prison over a meme where he took a picture of the, you know, his enemy's party. She's holding a sign. He wrote, "I hate freedom of speech," and they arrested him for that. He may be going to jail. The appeal is happening right now. Another appeal was just denied in Brussels. 7-month sentence for a political meme heads to appeal in Germany. This is that same one I was just talking about, but I want to go to video 43 here. This is Dries, I can't remember his last name, Van Lagenhove, I think. I'll find it on the other side. But here he is talking about being sentenced to potentially years in prison for private messages that were shared in a group chat that he was a member in. Not messages that he sent, messages that he read. Okay? His appeal has now been denied. Let's watch.
I have a good news and bad news. The bad news is that free speech is officially dead in Brussels. Today, the politically appointed Supreme Court has ignored all of the grave injustices committed against me and approved my prison sentence for racist memes in a private group chat. The good news is that 8 years of show trials, house raids, and other terror inflicted upon me by the Brussels regime has mentally prepared me to take this final big injustice on the chin and immediately get ready to hand out counterpunches. I am not backing down. There are 12 more criminal investigations and court cases for hate speech running against me, and none of them will ever stop me from fighting the Brussels regime and the Great Replacement. If you are with me until victory, share this video, show the world how the Brussels regime is killing freedom of speech in the heart of Europe, and show the world that resistance is alive and kicking. Oh, and by the way, this building behind me, the Palace of Justice, where the Supreme Court resides, was designed by a very corrupt Freemason who deliberately made it way too big because it had to be bigger than the St. Peter's Basilica in Rome to show the supposed victory of the Freemasons over the Church. But just like today, their victory will be short-lived. The Freemasons' Palace of Justice, or Injustice would be more correct, is literally collapsing from the inside out and impossible to repair. They had to install scaffolding to support the previous scaffolding. And just as this palace behind me is collapsing, the Brussels regime will soon collapse, no matter how many people they throw in jail for their opinion.
Yes, very, very symbolic there. A Belgian court sentences a prominent far-right activist to 1 year in prison for spreading hate. Dries Van Langenhove. Dries Van Langenhove at D. Van Langenhove. You know, thank God we aren't living in Europe. Thank God I can still speak freely. We still have the First Amendment. But they're doing absolutely everything they can to destroy it. And the attempts to destroy it at this point are coming almost exclusively from the Jewish lobby and the Israeli influence. As we showed last week, the, you know, Israeli billionaire saying, sorry, it's time. We have to get rid of the First Amendment. It's over. It allows you to insult me, so it's not good. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get rid of it now. No, you're not, actually. Period. And I want to show a video here from Benjamin Netanyahu, because I think he's doing a little bit of projecting here. I think he's projecting a little bit. Clip 37 here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu laying out his perspective on what's going on. I think he's exactly wrong, but he describes a pincer move. Benjamin Netanyahu describes a pincer move against Jews around the world between Islamists and right-wing anti-Semites. And he wants you to know how barbarous and brutal those mean old Islamists are. Let's watch.
It's a pincer movement. On the one hand, you're being attacked by radical Islamists who make an alliance with these progressives who supposedly call for human rights. How can they support human rights when they support these murderers, the people who invaded us, who slaughtered our men, beheaded them, raped women and then murdered them, burnt babies alive? You saw them also in Syria, these jihadists who tore out a heart from a Druze. It's a non-Muslim sect in Syria. You see this horrible video of this person cutting open the chest of a wounded Druze. He's still alive. And eating his heart out before he dies. I mean, this is barbarous. This is early Middle Ages. And so these people who speak of human rights, these progressives, are actually supporting the worst murderers on the planet. So that's one side of the attack. And the other is people on an extreme right that is also developing that are supporting them. These are not the people that we would call conservatives or people of who want to support the Judeo-Christian tradition on which our free civilization is based. And that's why we have to stand together, as I said before.
He loves invoking the early Middle Ages. What is it about that? He's always talking about the early Middle Ages as if it has relevance here. And, of course, he's got this tactic where anytime he's asked about something, like, specific, he just goes into these, like, gruesome descriptions of, like, gore. And it's just like, what are you talking about, dude? We're talking, you're supposed to be talking about political landscape that you're dealing with, and you just spent half of that 2-minute clip describing somebody cutting somebody's heart out. Okay, what? By the way, let's go to clip 41 here. I just want to go to clip 41 real quick before we move on to talk about what Benjamin Netanyahu just said. I just want to show you a video from today. They're in Hebron, which is part of occupied Palestine. Let's watch. Okay, here we have some IDF soldiers attempting to detain a child, little boy. Little boy runs away. Oh, he gets away. Not for long. Boom! Gun down in the street right there. So, okay. Oh, yeah, there you go. Firing at the little boy for running away from you. So I don't know. It's so I'm sorry. What you were talking about being some sort of moral superior, Mr. Netanyahu? something about somebody cutting somebody's heart out. I don't know. All I know is every single day I see more and more videos of little kids being murdered by the IDF. So morally, you're not any better than the Muslims. Frankly, I think in a lot of ways you're worse. And a lot of ways the things that you describe, Mr. Netanyahu, the poor Druze having his heart cut out, did that happen under Bashar al-Assad, or did that happen after you spent 15 years getting al-Assad out of the country so you could replace him with Islamists who then went on to carry out the attacks against the Druze and the Christians and any other ethnic minority within Syria? So it's like, okay, even the thing that you're describing is a direct consequence of your actions and your behavior. So again, what are we talking about here? And I think it's interesting that he sees a pincer move from the Red-Green Alliance on one side, progressive and the Islamists on one side, and the right-wing anti-Semites on the other. I see a completely different pincer move. I see a pincer move, and we can take Australia as maybe the best example, where you've got Muslims who hate white Christians carrying out a terrorist attack, and then you have Jewish groups weaponizing that terrorist attack to pass legislation that they'd been working on for months already anyway that made it illegal to oppose the Jewish lobby in Australia or to advocate for Australian heritage at all. That's the pincer move I see. I see a pincer move of Islamists and Jews working together, if not as partners, certainly as a feedback loop that is robbing us of our free speech, despite the fact that this is not our battle and not our fight, and we're not on either side at the end of the day. Am I wrong about what pincer move is happening here? Seems pretty blatant to me. And you have to understand how, like, ruthless this is. Because it's one thing to say, you know, you can't be an anti-Semite, no anti-Semitism. And then it's like, okay, well, then what if we just advocate for ourselves? We don't hate anybody. We don't even have to advocate against anybody. What if we're just in favor of white people and want white people to do well and want to advocate for white people? Well, you can't do that because at one point there was a state that, you know, was proud of being white and they didn't like Jews and they did the Holocaust. So because of the Holocaust, now being pro-white at all is de facto in and of itself anti-Semitic. And again, it's happening really in every, you know, Western country at this point. These laws are being put into place. And so you have the Muslims flooding in and making things worse, the white people reacting to it, and then that reaction being made illegal by the Jewish groups and their lobbying efforts all over the world, or, you know, like Benjamin Netanyahu himself. I mean, after Bondi, it was Benjamin Netanyahu himself who came out to make speeches saying, I expect a raft of anti-Semitic, you know, banning legislation to be passed on the basis of this. So that's the pincer attack. Pincer attack is against white people and specifically white men. And it's from the Islamists and the progressives, who obviously hate white people more than anything and only really hate Jews as an accident because they consider them white. And the other side being the so-called conservative Jewish groups that have taken over the Republican Party and are, you know, systematically eliminating anybody that, you know, wants to preserve white countries or Christian institutions. So I do see a pincer move. I just don't see it being aimed at Israel or the Jewish people. Let's go to clip 27 here. This is Dave Smith going off about some of this. As, again, I just want, you know, to reemphasize how utterly fraudulent and ridiculous, quite frankly, the moral superiority of the Israelis truly is. Let's watch.
Just think about this. How goddamn crazy it is that they want to sit there and try to convince you that no, now it's because we really care about the people. We're just really concerned. We have to overthrow the regime if they shoot their own protesters. After we're sending tens of billions of dollars to Netanyahu's regime. Because what? We care so much about Persian blood, just not Arab blood? Like, does anybody believe this? Like, how fucking stupid or brainwashed Do you have to believe that John McCain becomes a humanitarian? I understand he's dead, but they're all John McCain. So like John McCain becomes a bleeding heart hippie, but only when, but think about this, Rob. We can prop up Israel as they slaughter like 100,000 innocent people, but we become humanitarians. But coincidentally, we become humanitarians when it's, you know, Israel's biggest regional rival. That's when we start to really care about the people and the rights. And hey, are the women allowed to wear miniskirts? That's what really motivates my U.S. foreign policy, spreading liberalism around the world. It's just, I don't know, dude, it's too fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's, again, it's like, wait, now you care about the Iranian people? You just want them to be free? Like, it's all, it's just all so unbelievably fraudulent. That's the only word for it. It really is. We're not going to quite have time to go to that clip 15 that I wanted to go to. We'll go to it on the other side. Cause again, it just talks about how we've been lied into every war since Vietnam, but it's worse than that, folks. We have been lied into every war. Maybe the Civil War was kind of clear cut. But folks, you ever heard of the Maine? You ever heard of Remember the Maine? I mean, the Maine, the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, they knew was going to happen and did nothing to stop it, allowed it to take place so they could have the casus belli to get into war. Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin, totally fraudulent. Weapons of mass destruction, totally fraudulent. I mean, I don't know if there's been a war that America has been involved in since the Civil War that was not predicated or initiated on an absolute, abject, blatant lie. Because people don't want war. You have to lie people into it. The lie now is that we somehow care about the Iranian people, that it's for their sake that we want to overthrow their country. I don't think that's the case, actually. I think this is just brutal realpolitik conquering of a country for the sake of another country. It's not that complicated. It's certainly not beneficent or an act of goodwill or an act of charity on the world stage, but that's how it's being presented because the people are evil liars. We are going to go out to your phone calls for the entirety of the third hour. I'm sorry, thank you for holding, but we'll go to calls just as soon as we get back. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com today. I've got this beautiful looking knife that should be sitting out on my desk this whole time, actually. It comes with this sort of collector's edition box with the silver filigree on it. Is that the right word? I think it is. And it's actually this beautiful trench knife. I believe it's still 50% off on thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Listen to this. And that, it snaps in. It's a very high-tech and very lightweight belt holster here. 40% off right now. So get it while you can at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Life is fiery with its beauty on one side, the pinup girl on the other with the Alex Jones signature. It was 50% off yesterday. It's 40% off today. So it looks like that's going in a downward trajectory. Get it now at the cheapest price possible. 40% off, still a massive discount for this very powerful and very cool knife. That'll make a great gift for the little boy in your life. Or maybe adult. Maybe get it for an adult.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, there's a lot of, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones. And they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. That it, part of that is, but the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it. Just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking to for who to cast and what roles. Because you understand the broader course of history. How these things tend to operate. How assassinations tend to occur. How cover-ups tend to happen. How false flags occur. How staged events occur. How also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at what's, how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
Cartoonist Scott Adams is here for 10 years. Dilbert, his cartoon creation, has offered a sardonic look at contemporary corporate culture and the plight of the modern-day office worker. It has become the fastest-growing comic strip in syndication, appearing in more than 1,900 newspapers with a worldwide readership of about 150 million. With its success, the Dilbert phenomenon has transcended the comic page. In the past 3 years, the cartoon has spanned a vast empire, which includes best-selling books, an internet site, and over 700 Dilbert-inspired products. In January, the animated television series Dilbert debuted on UPN, and here is a clip from the series.
Mom? Mom?
In here, dear. Push a little harder. Get your shoulder into it.
Mom, what are you doing?
Stockpiling.
Stockpiling? Why?
Where have you been? Haven't you heard about Y2K?
Heard of it? I'm in charge of fixing the bug for my whole company.
You are. God help them.
Thanks, Mom.
Maybe you should start hoarding essential supplies before it's too late.
Why are you hoarding hair conditioner?
I had a coupon.
Mom, it would be a lot easier to talk to you if I could see you.
I'm not here. I'm at the warehouse shopping club with a moving van.
Am I so predictable you can record your side of the conversation in advance?
Yes, you are so predictable I can record my side of the conversation in advance. Put it back.
I am pleased to have Scott Adams join us now for a conversation about his guy, Dilbert. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
Charles Schulz was on this program once, and he said that he thinks that along with jazz, comic strips are the one pure American art form. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. The best cartoonists are probably coming out of the United States. I think we kind of own this art form, so I'll go with that.
Yeah, is that most of the best come out of the United States? Is that not, how prevalent are cartoons around the world?
Well, they're everywhere,
but didn't originate here. You know,
I say that ours are the best because I can't read those other languages, so they don't do much for me.
Do you need to read them to sort of get the sense of them?
Well, some of them, it helps, yeah.
Yeah. How did it come about for you?
Well, for me, it was the shortest version of the story is that I was working at Pacific Bell in my little cubicle, and one day I bought a book on how to become a cartoonist. I'd always been a doodler, and I read the directions in the book, and it tells you how to send off your cartoons to various syndication companies. And I sent off my little photocopies to half a dozen companies, and United Media called me and said, how would you like to be a syndicated cartoonist? And
that's
I said I would like that.
How long had you thought about it?
Since I was 6 years old, probably. Literally, I think I learned to read by looking at Peanuts books. And I thought, this looks like a much better job than, my uncle who's a farmer. I mean, that looks like hard work, this drawing pictures. Good job.
And how much of Dilbert is you?
I've estimated that at least a third of Dilbert is me. Got the same glasses, had that same cubicle job. I've had his luck, but he's also a composite of people I've worked with.
Yeah. Schulz, I think, said that Charlie Brown was 60% him and 40% of his imagination. So you're saying it's 33% of you, a composite of other people, and then maybe a third.
Yeah, I'd say it's about 70% people that I've known directly, and about a third me personally.
Yeah, the notion of Dilbert. How do you explain this phenomenon?
Well, it's one of those things that seems really obvious after you do it.
Yeah.
But here were, I don't know, 45 million people in the United States alone who were in cubicles, and they had no voice. They had all this common experience, but they had no way to express it. And so when I started doing cartoons originally, I wasn't really focusing on his office life. But after I started running my email and people said, we like that office stuff you keep doing, I started doing more of it. It was just a kind of an obvious thing to do. And people said, you know, you're talking for us. So
all right, folks,
huge.
That is a video from 1999 of the late Scott Adams playing it to honor him. Here's he died this morning, unfortunately. Michael Cargill in studio with me. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back.
Right. Simple traditions, pure delight. Optimal human beef tallow treats meals just right. Cook strong at high heat with a taste so bright. So get yourself to the Alex Jones store. Support the crew and the InfoWar.
Wake up, folks. Sprint this message. The globalist machine is tightening the chains, and they're after your freedoms.
The Podesta plan is in operation.
Don't worry, it's safe and effective. Don't you just love my GMO potatoes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is unfolding before our very eyes. We must question everything.
Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today in studio by Michael Cargill. You can follow him on X at Michael D. Cargill. Of course, he is the owner-operator of Central Texas Gunworks. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very good. It's been a while.
You know, you pulled out this knife. I need to see that knife.
You want to see the knife?
Oh, yeah, because I remember when the story of right before the Jews crucified, you know, Jesus, mm-hmm. They told the disciples, you know, you might want to sell your cloak and buy yourself a sword. So, you know what?
This is practically a sword, yes. I think, yes.
So you definitely want to get one of these, let me tell you. And you know what? If you bring this sucker to me, I will engrave this sucker with, you know, with, we'll figure out something to engrave on here.
Well, you know, it's got the cool design on the inside.
It's
pop
beautiful.
It open.
Oh man, it's beautiful.
It's got
look at that.
It's got the pinup girl there.
Oh yeah.
It really is a beautiful knife. And, you know, not to insult guns, but you don't have to reload this thing.
No.
It'll never jam.
No, not at all.
That's an efficient killing machine.
And you could never go wrong with a knife.
That's right.
It makes it very intimate.
It makes you want to, I mean, you hold this thing and you're like, oh, I wish somebody would attack me so I could do something with this.
We call that send him up the escalator to Jesus.
Yes, exactly. We'll put this right here. We'll keep this on display. It's a little tough to get out, but that's what you want. You don't want it falling out of your case. So that's what you want there.
Nice.
Try to balance this. So yes, the knife is beautiful and you can get it at thealexjonesstore.com. But you of course are a purveyor of guns, a seller of firearms. How's business going these days?
It's going pretty good. Going pretty good. We are, I tell you, it's that time of year where, you know, the tax stamp's down to zero. Mm. So people are trying to get their suppressors. They're trying to form one, their SBRs and stuff like that, because they don't have to pay that $200 tax stamp anymore. But, you know, I'm kind of upset with the administration because, you know, the Trump administration, they're in control of the White House. They have the House. The Republicans have the House. They have the Senate. And, you know, I'm upset because they have all three branches and we shouldn't have to, you know, register suppressors or register, you know, short barrel rifles or short barrel shotguns. We should be able to walk into the gun store, whatever, walk into anywhere and just, you know, and buy one of those. You know, you shouldn't have to go through that process. And that's very disheartening.
Mm. And, you know, I think last time last time you were on with me, it seems so long ago. I can't believe it. But I think it was during COVID when everybody was wanting to buy a gun. I remember I actually went into Central Texas Gunworks to get one and y'all were so packed. I was like, I got to come back later because the line was so long. Are you seeing a similar pattern right now? I mean, it seems like things are getting a little crazier. I'm thinking more about personal security. Are you seeing that in a wider trend? Or
I'm definitely seeing that with suppressors. So people are actually going everywhere they can to find themselves a suppressor, a silencer, whatever you want to call it, and they're trying to get them. And the ATF, they're actually crashing. On the website, you can't even do the paperwork during the day. It's very difficult. So actually for my customers, I'm going in at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning and processing the paperwork and uploading it, you know, sending it into the ATF to get it done then.
It's wow. Crazy. And it does seem like, I mean, the problem with gun control in this country is just like so many other things with the government. It's like a ratchet, right? It's like it only goes one direction. They're only ever tightening down our gun control. Now that we have the House and the Senate, is there ever even a discussion of, hey, let's roll back some of the restraints? Let's get more guns in the hands of people.
No, we need to keep the pressure on the Department of Justice. We need to keep the pressure on with the Trump administration and said, hey, you know, you're now in control. You have this year. To, you know, really, you have until like March, April, that first, the first 90 days here of this year to make sure that we pass something. We need to pass a bill. It does not need to be, executive order because the next president that comes into office can just sign something the first 24 hours and just negate that.
Yep.
So we need Congress to create a bill, a law, and put it into place where you don't have to register your SBRs. You don't have to register, your suppressors or your silencers or whatever. You can just, you know, just walk in and get it and walk out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would take Congress having to do that. But, you know, it's like add it to the list, I guess, right? Add that to the ever-growing list of things that Congress should be doing and that they're just not moving on. And, I mean, this is – I feel like a broken record now. It's like just do something, guys. But the Congress right now and the Senate, I mean, they – are incapable of doing anything. I mean, how do we light a fire under their butt?
I really would love for them to pass constitutional carry across all 50 states. That would be beautiful, where you don't need a license at all. But I don't think they have the appetite for it. I mean, they can't even vote on a Speaker of the House.
Right.
So I'm at the point now where, okay, it's baby steps. I'll settle for a concealed carry reciprocity. You know, at least let my license be recognized in all 50 states. You know, I'll settle for that right now. And then later on down the road, we'll go back and hit constitutional carry.
Yeah.
So in fact, we should have constitutional carry across all 50 states. I should be able to walk into New York, into California and carry whatever gun, whatever magazine capacity I want to, an AR-15 with 30 round magazine without having to California it, you know, and walk in and out of that state.
Right. After all, I'm pretty sure, tell me if I'm wrong, the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed, right? Doesn't say it won't be eliminated. The infringement is also against the Constitution. People seem to forget that part.
They totally forget about it altogether, I'm
telling
you.
So they just, it's the ratchet. It's, well, you can have guns, just not this type of gun, just not that many bullets. And eventually you end up totally defenseless, which I think, you know, I think people that didn't care about guns before, I mean, they see the way things are going and they see the way that justice is denied people these days. I mean, I'm not going to trust the police to defend me right now. I need to defend myself. I think more people are waking up and realizing that. Again, are you seeing a lot of new customers? Are you seeing people who already have guns doubling down? Because like I said, I'm thinking about self-defense right now, and I'm you know, buying new guns and making sure I always am carrying. And
yeah, what I'm seeing is when you have the President of the United States, you have the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of the War, pull all your general officers together, put them in the same room, and they release the fact that they're talking about the PT program, fat soldiers, you know, I call, you know, bull. You know, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about something else. So something is being planned, something is going on, and people need to wake up. You need to get yourself ready. You need to get yourself some guns. You need to get yourself some ammunition. You need to make sure you have your food, your water, your family's ready. There's a plan in place, you know, have an emergency plan or something like that, because something is on the horizon, and I don't know if it's aliens. I don't know what's going on, but something is happening, and you need to be prepared for it, because there's no way in the world that the United States, the President of the United States, the Secretary of War is going to pull general officers, every single general officer from around the world, and pull them into a room to discuss fat soldiers. We call that a memo.
Right.
That's a memo. That is not what you do.
Yeah. So there's got to be a different reason they're getting together, and we should be concerned about that. And I guess, what do you think about the leftists now that have suddenly discovered their love of the Second Amendment because they're fantasizing about going out and killing ICE patrols? Because it's this weird inversion of everything where now we as the libertarian, you know, pro-liberty people are cheering on the federal agents, but it's because they're actually, you know, enforcing the law. They're not going after American citizens. They're not trying to take our guns. They're doing, you know, what must be done for the safety of America. But on the other hand, you've got the leftists going, this is what the Second Amendment's all about. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's I'm glad they're educating themselves, you know,
right?
Even if it's for the wrong reason, but that's okay. You know, I'm glad I'm like, see the light, you know, come on, Caroline, you know,
right.
Look for the light.
It's yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Maybe now they'll actually understand why we have the Second Amendment, even though they're just completely off the mark with it. When it comes to ICE, I mean, how do you see, things progressing here? Cause I also see, like, all right, if people start getting guns and going to shoot up ICE officers on a regular basis, that's going to lead to gun control. Like, I see everything the left is doing now just directly contributing to whatever efforts for tyranny that are coming down the pipe.
Yeah, you're just going to, you know, you're going to open up the door and you're going to, you know, let this president, you know, release, you know, the National Guard and stuff like that. And we really shouldn't be to that point at all. So we got to be very careful, you know, not to push, you know, this president's not playing around. You know, mm-hmm. we look at, you know, what happened with Venezuela. You know, if you've learned anything at all, you know, listen to the people when they talk about, you know, what happened, the weapons that were used and the effectiveness and how everything was shut down. All the power was actually cut off. You know, the military, you know, Secretary Hegseth, you know, he's not playing around. He's actually growing the Department of War to a, you know, serious killer machine. You know, I look at Russia, you know, that country, they should have been able to wipe, you know,
Ukraine
off the face of the planet within the matter of, you know, days. But they couldn't do that.
Right.
You know, you're really not a superpower. The United States, we are a superpower. We are a force to be reckoned with. You know, when we can walk into a country and eliminate your military, kill the security people for the president of that country and snatch him out of his bed in the middle of the night, you better recognize that this is the United States of America and we're not fucking around.
It seems like it sort of changed the whole, like, dynamic of international relations. I mean, I know if I was Putin, I'd be going, oh, geez, maybe I'm not as safe as I thought I was. Because, I mean, and I don't know if we've gone over some of the details on this show yet, but there was that account from one of the security guards. I mean, it sounded like an alien invasion. It was like suddenly all the lights go out, suddenly all their phones disconnect. They all start bleeding out of their nose and mouth. I mean, it sounded crazy. And, you know, it's in the middle of a capital city in wartime. They've got they spent $8 billion on defensive, you know, radar systems. None of it helped. So, I mean, that's got to send a chill down the spine of Xi Jinping or Vladimir Putin.
Oh, absolutely.
They were safe up till then.
If you're Iran, you should be shaking in your boots.
Seriously.
You know, if you're Cuba, you should be very worried right now. If you are anyone that's in our crosshairs, you better be very concerned, because I'm telling you right now, this president is not playing at all.
Yeah. Although he doesn't seem to have that same, you know, oomph when it comes to domestic issues. Why do you think that is?
And that's the one thing that upsets me. You know, I wish we had him on our side when it came to the Second Amendment like that. I wish, you know, the way he's attacking, these other countries which we probably need to, because we need those resources, but we need to do that when it comes to the home front. We need to care about the people on the home front, you know, Americans right here. We need to, America first.
Yeah.
We need to get back to that. And talk about, you know, hey, you know, what about our Second Amendment rights here? You know, what about constitutional carry, you know, and things like that. And that's the one thing that concerns me, that we are not focusing on that at all.
Yeah. And again, things are heating up and getting kind of crazy. In fact, I know your gun store was robbed. Who robs a gun store? Like, that alone to me is like a bad signal, because somebody robbing a gun store is not somebody you want to live in your country. What happened?
Harrison, let me tell you. This guy walks in, two guys actually walk into the gun store. They steal a firearm. You know, the one guy, he takes the gun. He actually runs out the store with it. You know how you show someone the firearm or whatever? He, you know, takes the gun out, runs out the door with it, you know, goes around the side of the building. You know, my guys are on point, you know. So one of my employees actually called 911. My other employees jumped into a vehicle. I go out the back door. This guy go along the side of the buildings. We're actually looking at the camera, so we're watching him and seeing what he's doing. And I go out when I go out the back, he actually runs. There's a city bus station next to us.
Right.
So he goes over to the bus station. He actually runs and jumps on on the city bus. I run over, I stop the bus, I stand in front of the city bus, and I tell the bus driver, call your security. This bus is not moving. There's a guy stole a gun. He's in the back of the bus. We're not going anywhere.
Never use a city bus as a getaway vehicle. That's his first mistake. Well, that may be his fifth mistake. His first mistake was robbing Central Texas Gun Works. But then you hop on a bus. Okay. So you stop the bus.
So then I tell the bus driver to open the door. I jump on the bus. I say, close the door, lock the door, don't let anyone off. I said, we're not going anywhere. So we're calling the police. You know, we called them like four times. You know, nothing happened. I end up having to call ATF. I said, hey, you know, we got this guy, stole a gun, he's on the bus, I'm holding the bus, you know, the bus is not moving, right. And we need, you know, police here. We've called them like four times. He said, okay, we got it. So they call APD, the Austin Police Department, and so they're on their way, agents are from the ATF are on their way, and I tell, you know, the people in the bus, I turn around to them, I said, hey, we're not going anywhere. The guys on the bus were like, hey, you can't hold us without, you know, against our will. I turned sideways because I'm open carry my 1911 with a cross on it. I said, right. No one's getting off this bus. And so then as soon as I said that, you know, everyone on the bus grabbed their cell phone. They're dialing 911. I said, I don't care what you do. You can call them and you tell them there's a black guy on the bus with a gun. This bus is not moving. And so they're going off on their phones, calling everyone. And this guy's in the back of the bus. This guy is in the back of the bus. He's pacing. So he's pacing back and forth. He lights up a cigarette.
On the bus, okay.
On the bus. He smokes his cigarette. He's looking at me and I'm looking at him. I said, you do whatever you're going to do, but I tell you what, you're not getting off this bus. As a matter of fact, we will die on this bus before I let you off this bus with that gun. So figure out what you're going to do because it will end right here. So at that point, the people on the bus started calling. They're calling like the director of the city. They're calling. I heard one guy talking to like the bus companies, you know, their hotline,
they're calling
whatever.
Metro,
they're calling everybody. And so finally the APD shows up, the ATF shows up and they handcuff this guy. They get on the bus, they handcuff him and his buddy. And then, you know, they're searching him. They said, we don't have anything. There's no gun. I said, trust me, there's a gun. He has it in a backpack and it's on this bus. So they're searching, they're searching, they're searching. They can't find it. They're searching, they're looking, they can't find it. I tell my employees, I said, hey, text me the security camera footage of this guy with the backpack.
Right.
So they send me the backpack. I show the officers the backpack. They say, okay. So they continue to look. They're looking, they're looking, can't find it. They continue to look. And then finally they found the backpack in the back of the bus under the seat, you know, in the back with the gun inside. And boom, we caught him.
And that's how you stop crime, folks. Just like that. So this was in the middle of the day. This was just like, what time was this?
This is like 12 noon in the afternoon. I'm actually on my way to the airport to jump on a plane because my dad was having actually heart surgery. I'm trying to get to the airport to get on the plane. And then all this, you know, lays out. And I'm like almost late for my flight. It's like, but there's no way this guy, that plane's gonna wait. This guy's not, he is not leaving with this gun.
Of course not. I mean, isn't that just sort of symbolic? You've been in Austin for a long time, right? I mean, how long have you lived here?
I've lived here since 1999.
Yeah.
You know, and we have, you know, in the gun store, we've been there like 18 years and
right.
We have all kinds of things that actually happen at the gun store, where we have gangs, you know, from Houston, Texas drive over, try to break into the gun store, you know, doing COVID and stuff like that. You know, we've had, you know, people try to get guns to try to commit mass shootings. You have all kinds of things. So it's always something. And so, you know, we always kind of, you know, educate ourselves when it comes to security, when it comes to, you know, technology and stuff like that. And we try to grow every single year, you know, to something better.
Yeah.
It's a process and it takes a lot.
Well, and it's hard to do with a city that has become, absolutely covered in homeless camps and, the police don't respond anymore. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. From people that are sitting outside the gun store that are smoking crack.
Yeah.
You know, people that are, you know, walking by trying to, you know, get in through the door at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. It's always something, you know?
Yeah. It's just getting crazier and crazier. And so, yeah, it's no wonder but more people are talking about protecting themselves. And especially in Austin, the police won't come if it's not an active threat, right?
No.
I mean,
no. I had a situation where, you know, a guy actually, tried to break into the gun store probably about 2 or 3 months ago, and he broke the speaker that we use to communicate with people outside the building. He got away about 4 o'clock that day. The 7-Eleven down the street called me up and said, hey, Mike, we got this guy that you said, you know, broke into the gun store. He's actually in the 7-Eleven. I said, okay. So I go over to the 7-Eleven. I said, hey, you know, I looked at this guy. I said, okay. Yeah, that's him. So I called 911. I said, hey, we got this guy that tried to break in the gun store. Here's the police report. He's inside the 7-Eleven. You know, send the police. They're like, hey, what do you want us to do about it?
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm holding him at gunpoint. And I hung up the phone. As soon as I said that, boy, that triggered some shit, let me tell you.
Yeah.
About 10 police officers showed up to the guns, showed up to 7-Eleven there, and pulled into the parking lot. And I immediately put my hands in the air. I said, I don't have a gun. I would never pull a gun out in this situation. The guy's right there. Yeah, he broke into the gun store.
Yeah, go get him. No, that's like a, it's like a common thing now. People will go, well, if you need the cops to get there, tell them you have a gun and they'll show up. But other than that, they literally won't show up.
Yeah, you can lie to 911, but you cannot lie to police. 911 are not law enforcement, so I can lie to 911 dispatcher, but you cannot lie to police. That's a Supreme Court case.
But it's a shame, but you should, I mean, you shouldn't have to anyway, right? You got a guy that tried to break into your gun store right there, identified on camera with the police report. You would think that that would be enough to get somebody out, but it's not. And again, I think people are sort of realizing this, especially just seeing what's going on with the Department of Justice and these people. I mean, yesterday I had a story, a guy 57, he'd been arrested 57 times and then was out on bail and killed somebody. I mean, law and order is falling apart. So, of course, people are going for guns.
Yeah, you have these cities. The major cities are filled with these DAs or district attorneys who are being funded by Soros or whoever, and they're not prosecuting, you know, people that need to prosecute. Instead, they want to prosecute police officers who are actually trying to do their job. And so that's the one thing that, you know, we're having a huge problem with. You know, you have people that are repeat offenders, sex offenders, people that are breaking into businesses that are graduating to the next phase, and they're not prosecuting these people at all. And that's going to be the problem. And we need to get rid of these DAs, the district attorneys, these county attorneys, and especially, you know, in Texas, you know, all your major cities, it's like this major liberal mecca, you know, and, mm-hmm. and we really need to, people need to wake up and get to the polls, go vote and get rid of these people and get them out of office.
Yeah. We got to recognize where all of this is coming from. Cause I feel like a lot of people, I mean, you know, people are just zoned out. They're not paying attention. They don't get what's going on. And so they don't have a plan. So if an emergency strikes, they're going to be completely like unprepared. You mentioned that before. I mean, it seems obvious, but people need to be reminded. You have to have a plan in place before the emergency happens. So what would you advise people like right now? What are the biggest dangers people have to face? How should they be prepared for them?
Absolutely. You need to figure out how you're going to draw your firearm. If you need to pull that gun out of your concealed carry position, pull out your holster, how are you going to do that? You know, what are steps going to take for you to actually pull that gun out? Do you have a safety on the firearm? You know, do you have to put a round in the chamber? Do you already have a round in the chamber? Whatever your steps are, I don't carry a gun with a safety. I carry a round in my chamber. So when I pull that gun out, I'm going to put you on the escalator to Jesus and send you on up and let Jesus sort it out. You know, so that you need to practice your plan, you know, have an emergency, you know, outline of what's going to happen. If I'm at the home, at home and I'm out shopping somewhere and my family's with me, you know, we have a code word that we use, a word that we can just say in a sentence to say, hey, there's an emergency going on. We need to get out of here to get the family. Let's go, because it's about protecting me. It's about protecting my family. And we need to focus on that. So get that code word, have a plan in place, whether you're out and about going about the day. It could be a mass shooter. It could be anything that's going on. You need to be prepared for your family. You know, here we are in Austin, and we're going to have I guarantee you, we're going to have this snowpocalypse that's going to pop up. You know, everything's going to shut down. People are not thinking about water. They're not thinking about electricity, whether they have a generator. They're not thinking about food right now. It's going to be 3 or 4 days. You need to plan for any type of emergency. Something is going on in the United States right now. I said it once. I say it again. When the President of the United States and the Secretary of War gets together, pulls all the general officers from around the world into one room to discuss fat soldiers, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about something else. So you better get your family in check and get them ready. Have a plan of what you're going to do. Do you have guns? Do you have ammunition? Do you have food? Do you have water? Do the dogs, your pets have food? That is important. You need to have a plan of what you're going to do, because if you do not, you're going to get caught by the wayside. And I'm telling you now.
Yeah. And it, you know, guns are kind of the most important part of that, right? Because you can have all the food in the world, but if somebody with a gun comes up, that's their food.
Absolutely. You know, you need to have guns, ammunition, enough ammunition, because we don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going on. We won't know until it actually happens.
Yeah. And you got to have a plan before that breaks out. Now, I do want to go to calls. We have time for one call here before the break, then we'll go to more on the other side. Let's go to Sean in Alaska. He's called in about border and immigration on line 4. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Yeah. Are you there, Harrison?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Just a couple of quick points real quick. Why did the liberals not change the U.S. code on deportation when Biden was in office? I think it's because they don't want this. Remember the Great Reset. They want an angrier world, like what Klaus Schwab said. They want this. They want a new division and tact. That's like their new division tactic.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. What do you think about that? The fact that they're allowing the border chaos to take place because it causes chaos that they can take advantage of.
We need to protect our borders 100%. We need to make sure that, you know, because anybody can get through. You know, you have people that are trying to, their goal in life is to kill us and wipe us off the face of the earth. And if we don't secure our borders, we're going to be in trouble.
We let them in by the millions. More with Michael Cargill on the other side from Central Texas Gunworks. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish DMOS was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. All that stopped with the CMOS because it's a thyroid issue, and the CMOS has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his self-supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. That I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, and it has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's
for
good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
Are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on, like, my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's like, amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But, like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to, like, the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones until I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine's one of those things where, like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, this is not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize it until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish sea moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fights will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I, of course, am your host, Harrison Smith. You can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Take advantage of the 40% off sale on this beautiful knife that we have available. Life is fiery with its beauty, thealexjonesstore.com. I'm here with Michael Cargill. You can follow him on X at Michael D. Cargill. MichaelCargill.com is where you can go to find out more about him. He, of course, owns Central Texas Gunworks and is always involved in some crazy things going on in Austin. But we're going to take your phone calls and see what you have to say. Let's go to line one here. Max in Wisconsin. You're on the air about Trump. Go ahead.
Hey, since you have Michael Cargill on, can I first get his thoughts on FRT triggers before I make my Trump comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked that question because you know that my case, the Cargill case, which is the bump stock case that went all the way to the United States Supreme Court, that case actually made it easier for, you know, FRTs to be illegal in the country. So thanks to the bump stock case, we actually totally killed the ATF, and they weren't able to ban the brace anymore. They're not able to ban FRTs, the force reset triggers anymore. So because of the Cargill bump stock case, it totally just, you know, weakened the ATF. So now they have to go through Congress, and we know Congress is not going to get anything done because they can't even vote on a Speaker of the House, you know, effectively. So
I wouldn't be surprised if they came together. You know, if it's something that we don't want to have happen, I'm sure they can muster the energy to do that. But that's great. So that's huge. For those of us that aren't super familiar, what are FRT?
Yeah. So the force reset trigger, it allows you to, you know, basically fire a rifle or a hand, whatever, you know, faster, you know.
Okay.
So it kind of mimics, you know, it's kind of similar to, you know, almost like a machine gun, but it really is not.
Right.
Because definitely if a machine gun is one action of the trigger, more than one round goes out, that's a machine gun. But if I pull the trigger, only one round goes out, one action of the trigger, that's a semi-automatic. So it still keeps it as semi-automatic.
Just taking advantage of the mechanics there. Does that answer your question, Max?
Yeah. You know, basically, you know, with criminals having like the switch, which is like illegal, fully automatic, I think FRTs are important just because then you can legally have something that's very similar to full auto to protect yourself. And, you know, like you said, in any bad situation for prepping, you know, so you'd recommend buying an FRT for prepping?
Absolutely. I recommend you have an FRT. I recommend you having several 30-round magazines and you know, and thousands of rounds of ammunition. And make sure everyone in the household is prepared and they're trained.
It used to be like you'd have to spend $30,000 to get some 1980s full auto, but now you can, for $200, buy an FRT and drop it into your AR-15 and have something that's basically the same, which I think is great, you know, that we have that type of freedom. But I was wondering, Harrison, regarding Trump, if you saw, I've called in before and mentioned that he's our lunar eclipse president, and his astrological sign then is like a chaos and order type thing, and his power time period is during full moons. He did the Venezuela strike and scooped up Maduro during the full moon. Did you see that?
Interesting. I had not seen that.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting. And he did the Iran strike also during a new moon, you know, and it's just they say like people who have that as their star sign astrological symbol, that during a moon event, lunar eclipses, full moons, new moons, whatever, they have like more likelihood of their actions being successful, you know. So
interesting.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
I had not noticed that. Wasn't paying attention to the phases of the moon during these big events. That is interesting. I mean, there's definitely something to that. I mean, it's a phenomenon, but it's absolutely true. It's often, I don't know, I often have it where I'm like, man, something's off right now. Something feels weird. And it's like, oh, it's a full moon. I mean, it clearly does affect people. I don't know about how that applies to Trump though. Thank you very much for the call, Max. Any comments on that?
No.
It is interesting. Could be a coincidence. Could be something more. We don't know. Let's go to Garrett in California here. You've called in about some of the free speech stuff going on in Australia. Go ahead, Garrett. You're on the air.
I was just wondering, you know, how long it's going to be before that's what we're dealing with here? Because, you know, 90% of the people out there aren't listening to what's going on in Australia and New Zealand. I have one of my best friends in the UK, and now I'm afraid to text him certain things because, for obvious reasons, I don't want to get in trouble. That. And I am in California, and my wife reminded me, well, you know, in the last hour, that I'll bring up things on a local basis. And it was maybe like, I hate to say this, but it was like 14, 15 years ago where Glenn Beck made a few comments about be very careful to think about your school districts and your county supervisors and stuff like that. And my wife says things like, well, how come we don't even hear about the elections going up? And all of a sudden, it's like it's come to fruition. Mm. Every single time there's a I put up a post about illegal, you know, taco stands in my town, and you'd think that the fury of God was come over
right.
me, you know. And, you know, I noticed that people would come out and say things, and I made a comment about, well, I make these comments because I want other people to come from their corner. And there's people that are conservative, but they're scared. Are they scared of,
yep.
you know, I can't make that thing. But at some point it's ridiculous because I've gone out of my way to say, hey, this is an, I guess I made a few comments to the social media companies. I got no response. I've gotten kicked off of every.
And it doesn't matter how polite you are, or how, you know, much you couch your objection in language like, oh, look, I don't hate anybody, but, you know, we should do this. No, you're exactly right. I get what you're saying, that it's the people that you're surrounded by right now that would be happy to usher in free speech laws like Australia, or anti-free speech laws like Australia is implementing right now. What's your take on that, Michael? I mean, the First and Second Amendment, these are two peas in a pod, right?
Yeah, the people that you need to know in your area, your county, your city is going to be your county commissioner. You need to know who your sheriff is. You need to know who your district attorney is, because those people are the most important. You know, the district attorney, you know, is going to prosecute you, prosecute whoever. The sheriff can kick the federal authorities out of the county. The commissioner holds the purse strings, you know, in the county. We found that out doing COVID and things like that. So those three people, you really need to know who they are. So very important when it comes to your elections
and your life, you know, those are the elections that actually impact, you know, your neighborhood and your quality of life. Now, what about people being afraid to speak up? Because I think it's beyond people being afraid to speak up. I keep finding that people are afraid to even like be introduced to these ideas. Like there are some people where I'm like, I would talk to them about politics, but I just know they're going to freeze up and like get scared the moment, you know, we talk about something that could even be potentially contentious. People are scared. How do we get them to break out of that?
You just have to start those conversations, you know, have that, you know, discussion, say, hey, this is what's going on. You know, what are your thoughts? You know, what about this? And give them a different mindset. You know, let them, you know, see if they can look at it from a different point of view. You know, can you look at it from this angle? You know, can you see, you know, what can happen over here? And maybe they'll come around. You know, you just never know.
You say, what if, you know, what if, ICE is actually not, you know, abducting citizens? Are you still doing the right thing? But yeah, it really is fear that's keeping, you know, if you go to the root of it, it's fear, that's causing all these other problems. It's people just being absolutely afraid to speak up and say what's wrong when they absolutely know what's wrong. Everybody knows. Everybody's just afraid to say. Let's go to line seven here. Matthew in Texas is a former Air Force veteran. Go ahead, Matthew, you're on the air.
Hello. Harrison. Hey, I just wanted to let all the veterans out there know that, you know, I did some time in the United States Air Force as a flying crew chief. And, you know, back when the Biden administration was in office and we pulled out of Afghanistan, I'm almost positive that they were bringing Muslims into the country from Afghanistan, completely unvetted.
They were, for
sure. I kind of hope that, yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, that they're still not doing this under the new leadership, but I just wanted to let all the veterans out there kind of, you know, maybe, you know, keep an eye on that, you know, maybe, yeah, that's definitely something that we should, be on the lookout for.
Yeah, we definitely should not be involved in that.
And thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do what I can. So, yeah, thanks, Harrison.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, I mean, they've, you know, they're unvetted. They've moved in by the millions. It's not stopping, I don't think. I mean, they're still allocating $5 billion for migrants as we speak. And, it ain't cause it's good for us. Let's just say that. Let's go to line eight here. Nick in Minnesota. Let's talk about what's going on in Minneapolis, or at least there in Minnesota. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. So I just wanted to talk about
the corruption that's going on in the state. I've grown up in the Twin Cities my entire life, went to public schools in St. Paul. St. Paul is quite different from Minneapolis. We're very similar, but as far as the politics are concerned, we're a lot different. The corruption in the state has been going on for a long time, you guys. I first saw it when I was a kid. Teenager going to school, and all these transportation companies started popping up that were Somalian.
Mm.
And you'd see them everywhere, and it didn't make sense, just like the daycare centers. And millions of dollars seemed to be allocated towards popping up all of these transportation companies, and it was really weird. Then all of a sudden the daycare fraud came out, and there's not enough coverage on the Feeding Our Future, and now there's all this daycare center stuff coming out. Just read that the feds are probing into hundreds of millions of dollars of cash that was leaving Minneapolis International Airport that was in Somalian luggage that was going out of state.
Yeah.
Half of the federal funds for Minnesota for federal programs ran in Minnesota may have been defrauded. It's been endless. Ilhan Omar, one of her aides, pled guilty. It's been absolutely endless, and I've seen it go on literally since I was about 12, 13 years old.
And it's amazing because we played the video yesterday of a guy going around the protest asking people what they thought about the Somali fraud, and they'd either hadn't heard about it or just assumed it was fake because it was coming from a right winger. But I actually have a video. I want to go to this, and I want to get Michael Cargill's comments on it. Let's go to clip 36 here because this is the mayor of Minneapolis who's actually admitted that fraud is real and that it's actually happening. Let's go to clip 36 now. This is Mayor Jacob Frey.
Of dollars of taxpayer money for government programs. Do you think Governor Walz did enough to stop the fraud in your state? And do you support his decision not to run for re-election?
Well, look, Governor Walz is the reason that we've got paid family leave in Minnesota. He's the reason we've got free school lunches. Him and I, we've been through thick and thin.
But did he do enough to combat fraud,
over these
Mayor? Did he do enough to combat fraud?
Look, obviously, everybody could have done more to prevent fraud. And I think that's a fair point to make. Do more to prevent fraud. And you look what he's doing right now. He's setting up a whole bunch of infrastructure to do that. And by the way, look, the fraud's real. We've all got to acknowledge it. The fraud is very real. And by the way, when somebody commits fraud, and there are many that have done that, you investigate it, you charge, you prosecute, you put the person in jail. As an individual, you put the person in jail as an individual. You do not hold an entire community, any community, accountable for the actions of individuals.
There you go. He admits the fraud is real. What do you think about that?
Go figure. I mean, my goodness, he's sitting there. He's like jerking off the freaking governor.
Well, it's funny. You see, you know, they're like, what has he done enough? And he's like, well, he's the one that started all of these programs. It's like, I don't think that's quite the argument you want to make. Like, he's the reason that there is free lunches. It's like, oh, the free lunch program that's been scammed for $10 billion. Okay. So it was him the whole time. All these lefties that are acting like it's not real, even your champion. Mayor Frey recognizes that the fraud is in fact real.
Go figure.
They'll still deny it. Let's go to Jeff in Texas on line 11. He's from Australia and wants to talk about this anti-discrimination bill. Jeff, are you an expat? Did you move away from Australia?
Yeah, man. How are you guys doing today?
Good, thank you.
All right. I left in 2010 and moved to Phoenix and ended up in Austin. Anyway, I watched that. There was like a really soft kind of tone in about 2005 or so.
Hey, I'm kind of having trouble hearing you, Jeff. I'm sorry. If you could just speak right into your phone, make sure you're not covering the mouthpiece. Just can't really hear you.
Better.
Go ahead.
So I left, like, noticed in 2005, like, the TV just kind of went, started going crazy. Like, all this censorship started to pick up a bit, and I read a lot on the internet saying like Australia was the testing ground and all that, and it just got really bad from there. It was honestly one of the reasons I agreed to leave. And I mean, I just kind of watched my family back there, and they all think I'm nuts for staying over here, and
It's not fun. It's
an absolute bummer. And yeah, Australia has been the testing ground for the New World Order for a long time. And it seems to me like it started happening around the 90s, right around the time they disarmed everybody. Well, what do you know? I mean, Australia might be the best example of, like, that's what happens when they take your guns. It's COVID camps and anti-free speech laws. I mean, they are the warning case for us.
Right. You disarm this society, you disarm the entire country, and then here you have COVID comes over. You know, they force them to shut down. If you leave your home, they beat you, whatever. It's crazy. And that's something that I don't think we will ever allow to happen here in the United States. It definitely won't happen here in Texas for sure. Because I remember when, you know, COVID happened, they tried to, you know, shut things down here. They sent the police department, the fire marshal, and the code enforcement to the gun store.
Uh-huh.
Say, hey, we got a call that you guys were not social distancing. So you guys need to, you know, make sure you're doing so and so. We need to come in to inspect. I said, no, you can't come in. You come in, you're trespassing, and I have more guns than you do.
Right.
So what are we going to do here? And so they stood there for a second. They thought about it, and they turned around and walked away. Either, put up or shut up.
You know, it's the beautiful thing about America. It's like, we really do risk losing that. And I can't help but notice it's the UK, it's Germany, it's Australia. I mean, they're all getting these really draconian free speech laws. America's not. I mean, do you think that's because we have the First Amendment, or do you think that has more to do with the Second Amendment? Because obviously the First Amendment puts a restriction, but words on a paper aren't going to really stop politicians when they want to do something. Why do you think it is that America hasn't received the same level of restrictions that other countries have?
I think it's because we have the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment protects all of your constitutional rights.
Right.
With the Second, I can protect the First. I can protect the Third, the Fourth, the Fifth. I can protect all of my constitutional rights. Because once I can arm myself, protect myself physically, then I can say whatever I want to say.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do about it. So absolutely, the Second is the most important.
I agree completely. Thank you for the call, Jeff. Let's go to Craig in Washington now. On line five here, he wants to talk about corruption in Washington's government. I've never heard of such a thing. Corruption, Craig, what do you mean?
My sister is a human resource commissioner for Pierce County, and she's no longer in that position. But in 2024, she uncovered some corruption within the Pierce County government there, where monies were allocated for government programs, but when she went to resource the money, it wasn't there.
Mm.
And she told me it was a lot of money. And so what this call is about is I'm really looking for help. Guys that are on the ground out there investigating. You can go to Craig, 184-860 on X, and anybody that's on the ground, I know we can get all the information that's needed for someone to go in there and actually put the county council on.
So this is Washington State you're talking about?
Yeah, this is right here in Washington State. And, she talked about this a little bit with me in 2025, but it wasn't until the Minnesota fraud came out that I put two and two together, and I says, wait a minute here. This is a little bigger than just Minnesota.
Oh, it's absolutely everywhere. And, I mean, that's the thing. Every single, the county, the city, the towns, I mean, the fraud, the graft, it is relentless. It's everywhere, and it's destroying this country. I don't even know how we get a handle on this. I mean, the fraud this large, what do you even do?
We have a city manager here in Austin, that it makes more than the president of the United States. Okay. The president of the United States is the most powerful person in the free world. And you have in Austin, Texas, a city manager that makes way more than he does. That's insane to me. You have a Austin Independent School District, top leader there who's making more than the president of the United States. What's going on here? That's a problem. That is a serious problem.
It is, and it's still not enough. You can pay them these exorbitant salaries, and they'll still rob you blind if you give them the chance. And, yeah, it's everywhere. It's at every different level. But that just goes back to what we were saying earlier. You got to know who your local politicians are. You got to know who you're voting for and know whether they're criminals. In Austin, in my opinion, a lot of them are massive criminals, and their graft is right out in the open. I mean, the guy, Jimmy Flanagan, loses his election to city council and just immediately gets given some million-dollar position in the government. It's a win-win situation for them. They either win the election or they win some, you know, cushy job for the next 4 years so they can run again. And, yeah, it's absolutely everywhere. It's not just Washington either. That's what we need. And this is the thing. I mean, you can have a 23-year-old guy, Nick Shirley, go with his camera and blow this entire story out of the water. You can do that too. Everybody can do that because I guarantee you your city is just as corrupt as Minneapolis is. So go out, get a camera, and start filming, y'all. You have any advice for people that want to try to expose this stuff?
No, you're right. You know, absolutely. That's why, you know, your podcasters, you know, those people are very important. They're actually exposing a lot of this stuff. I'm listening to everybody. I listen to as many people as I possibly can to see what's going on out there on the ground. I try to remember, you know, don't remind yourself where you are, you know, listen to everything. And, you know, there's always something going on, and it's just insane. It's just absolutely crazy.
And it's just literally every level of government. Let's go to Mike in Massachusetts on line six. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Very good, thank you. You want to talk about the anti-Semitism bill? Are you talking about the one in Australia?
Well, it's pretty much all the way around the world because You see what's happening here in America. They want to keep passing laws saying everything's anti-Semitic, and things that aren't even anti-Semitic, they're calling it. And this is all being done on purpose, again, for the ADL to get money. And they're probably going to start staging terror attacks, blaming it on anti-Semites when it's really them. Not meaning Jewish people, meaning the ADL, because you know how that all works with them and the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, of course. And we were talking about this yesterday with Rex Jones about how sort of the worse Israel behaves, the more people get mad at it, the more they get mad at it, the more anti-Semitism there is. The more anti-Semitism there is, the more that places like the ADL can accrue power or donations or anything else. So it's a pretty sick feedback loop. And I don't care what your excuse is. Hands off the First Amendment, hands off the Second Amendment. It really doesn't matter whether you predicate it on anti-Semitism or child sex abuse material. It's like most of the things that they're putting forward right now are frankly illegitimate and, you know, wouldn't solve the problem that they're predicated on in the first place. But obviously we are seeing this happen in a worldwide fashion. What do you think the biggest threat to our constitutional rights are at this moment?
They're using tactics like tactics with us, where they're using the banking system still, even though we have a president that's a Republican in office. They're still using the banking system to attack, you know, businesses. You know, we're under attack. You know, I have a company called Prosperity Bank, who's actually trying to go after us, you know, and shut us down. So, you know, they're out there, they're doing what they need to do, and they're using, you know, the government system. They're in conjunction with the administration and stuff like that. And so you got to be on your P's and Q's, and you have to watch everything because they're trying to come after, you know, everyone.
Yeah.
And so they're doing it to gun stores. They're doing it to, you know, whether you want to believe it or not. So, hey.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things they'll do is they'll, like in Australia, they'll do gun control, but then they'll carve out certain groups that get gun control when others don't. That's not how this works, actually. No, at least not in America. We all have a right to speak. We all have a right to own guns. God bless the founding fathers for writing that stuff down and codifying it in the Bill of Rights, because you can see just how quickly it can all be stripped away in these other countries. Michael Cargill, thank you so much for being here with us, folks. If you're in Texas and need a gun, go to Central Texas Gun Works. Follow Michael Cargill on X and Michael D. Cargill, and the website michaelcargill.com. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
Thank you. As always, more guns equals less crime. Go out there and buy yourself a gun.
That's a fact. Trust the science, folks. More guns, less crime. That's going to be it for us. We'll see you tomorrow here on the War Room. In the meantime, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself a big-ass knife. We'll see you next time.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rating. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits. Improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue. Possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.